kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole, how are you doing?
Well, as you can tell by the sound of my voice, I'm a little more gravelly than usual.
Which means we just woke up.
Yeah.
Which means there's an interview.
That was a fantastic segue.
I know. I worked very hard at them.
That's the best one you've ever done, and they've all been bad.
they have all been bad. Joining us from En-ROAD today, Florian, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, guys.
I was going to attempt your last name, but then I saw it, and I chickened out.
That's fine. So, Lugoyelek, and every time I've been to the States, people have struggled with it, so no hard feelings there.
Okay, I figure Florian is just good enough, and it would save me the embarrassment, and you said it yourself, so... Now we know who you are, and how are you doing today? How's things going?
Yeah, going pretty well. Good to go.
You are joining us from En-ROAD. You guys have the game Fallback. It just released a version 2, Fallback Uprising, on Steam. For the people who don't know what this game is, give us the sales pitch.
So, Fallback is it's a roguelite game, and it's in 2.5D. So basically, you're going to have your gameplay that's all happens in 2D, but you're going to be free to explore the environment in 3D. So you're going to grab onto a ledge and be able to walk onto that little ridge and see what's in the background. So that's the general experience. And in terms of story, there was a ecological disaster at the surface of the Earth. And I'm hoping that's not what's going to happen. And so...
Certainly a little too real right now.
Yeah, I know. And so people had to hide underground. And for hundreds of years, they've managed to survive in caves. And some of them like recreated some life based around robots that helped them survive underground. And one of these days, some scientific underground finds a plant that he hopes to bring back to the surface, saying, if we bring that plant back up, maybe we can live on the Earth again. And unfortunately, people who were ruling the underground world, they're saying, well, you know, it's kind of nice down here, and we're not going to let you go back up. And so you're going to battle robots on your way out, and you're gonna have adventures. You're going to die a lot of times.
We are going to die a lot of times.
Joe's going to die more than me.
Probably, yeah.
I did fairly well my first couple rounds.
Oh, nice.
I was really impressed that, you know, with a roguelike, the rule is they're just hard. And so I try not to hold that against the roguelike. Going into it, I know I'm just going to die. Yet my very first run through Fallback, I knocked out two of the bosses and was just like plowing through. And then I died to something stupid, like I fell off a cliff and was low on health.
Terrible ending there.
I made a jump that I couldn't reach or something stupid, because that's the kind of shit I do.
Proud of you.
It was like, it was such a good run, and then I just botched it. And then at that point I was like, well, at least I know it's playable.
So that's actually one of the things we introduced in this version was difficulty settings. We didn't have them in the first version, and here we've got like easy, normal, and hard. And I finished the game in normal. It's just making sure, you know, that everything works. But hard is like, whoa, it's really extreme. It's like even being good at the game, I'm like, I'm gonna do that, but a bit later.
Yeah, I'm of the I have nothing to prove variety. Yeah. And I played it first on normal because I was like, well,
we got to see what the game has to offer. Yeah. Right? We got to see what's there.
But then, like, the after that death, I was like, easy it is.
I'm still on classic difficulty. I haven't changed it yet.
Ooh. No, I want to be able to actually beat a game eventually. Easy is the way to go. But I always appreciate when there are easier difficulties, because that's an accessibility feature that not enough games have, especially roguelikes.
Yeah. So, and we are all about accessibility on this show.
We all know I love accessibility.
I think it's one of the things we thought of when introducing those settings is we try to make the game quite pretty, have a lot of nice kinematic moment, you know, where you're just stopping your character in the middle of scene and be like, oh, that's quite pretty. And we wanted to make sure that even if people didn't want to spend hours and hours into the game, they could still reach a point where they discovered all the little secrets, all the little areas that felt like that. So I think that was a big motivation behind this kind of easy mode.
Because there was one moment where I was running through, and I don't know if I was fighting with something, and then I crouched down and backed up, and when I did, I went into this like air vent into another tiny little room, and I was like, "The fuck's that? Where is this all this time? How many of these have I missed?"
Yeah, we tried. We think it's great to have little secrets. And it's actually quite a difficult decision to make when you're, I feel like as a game maker, is you're going to spend a lot of time and effort into creating those little rooms that almost nobody will see. And since you've got limited budget, whether it's time or money, you don't want to make too many of those. But at the same time, you want to introduce enough that, it's actually going to be, you're going to give player that feeling of, ooh, there's something there, you know?
Yeah.
So glad you found one.
It was funny. It was such a cool little room, too. It was just tucked away back in the vent. And I was like, for the love of all the fucks, how many of these did I just walk past?
I love your exclamations, Cole.
Yeah, it's usually for the love of all the fucks on Sunday, but I was trying to be brief.
And it's Saturday, so let's be fair.
Yeah, you know.
Can't talk about fucks on Sunday when it's a Saturday. We got to be fair.
Yeah, I guess I'll have to say for the love of all the fucks on Saturday today.
Yeah. By the way, you could swear on our show if you didn't realize.
Yeah.
If we didn't make that clear yet.
I didn't have the opportunity yet, but just wait for it.
Bring it on. We're ready for it. So, go ahead.
No, Joe, sit down. Wait, I got a question. How come this guy decided to go with a 2.5D environment?
That's what I was going to ask. Nice. We're starting to think alike.
I don't like that. Stop it.
So it's actually, I think there's a lot of roguelites that are in 2D, mm-hmm. and a lot of them are really cute pixel art style, and we wanted to bring something different to the table. And also, I think we since it was going to be an underground setting, we wanted to be able to kind of fuck with your minds. Here, you see, I did it.
Nice. Hey, welcome to the club.
So, no, but really being able to bend the rules of how you understand the environment around you and kind of lose a player in that. So not giving away everything, but basically the environment you're walking through, it's not... you can go straight forward for a couple of rooms and end up in a... like at a 90-degree angle from somewhere you've started. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's really mind-bending. And we wanted to give the player the opportunity to do that. And also we had like great people in the team who had worked on 3D games and would have been like, they wanted to keep doing 3D. So I guess that's a big part of it as well.
That leads me to two things. One's a comment, one's a question. I hope I don't forget the question before I get the comment out. But the comment is, the camera movement when like the environment is shifting is some of the smoothest shit I've ever seen.
Ooh, like
it just feels so cool when the camera moves.
Well, nice.
To shift with the room. The second one, yeah, I forgot it.
Proud of you. Wow. It's only been like 10 seconds and you forgot it already.
I know it. I did take my medicine too and I'm still like, zoop.
You know, you can like have a notepad with you and write shit down during the show.
I used to do that, and then I spent the whole time drawing dicks, and now that just seems like a bad idea. Then you'd be like, "Cole, are you paying attention?" I'd be like, "No, I'm drawing dicks, duh."
True. True. I want to appreciate the fact that you guys like to reward people who go left. Like in games where you spawn somewhere, games are designed to move to the right, and I always appreciate games that let you go left first, and there's either a secret back there, or normally, or usually in Fallback, I'll find these rooms where you hit the lever and either enemies drop down and then you get a reward at the bottom, or you get that little Space Invader style minigame, which I think is baller as hell. That is such a cool little minigame. But I love that you reward people who go left. I love it.
Yeah, it's part of the whole, you've got to explore your environment and kind of not stick to the rules. So yeah, indeed, you can go right and things are going to happen and you're going to do your run. But going left, there's something. There's the rest of the world, you know, I think it's interesting. And also there's a lot of places where when you understand how you move around ledges and you know how the camera shifts, you can try to explore. It's probably going to ruin your run, to be fair, but you can try to explore like place where you're not supposed to go, because sometimes there's also something there. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a big part of the fun. It's trying to, you know, you bend the rules to get to that that like space that you can see, but I don't think you can reach. But actually, maybe with a bit of trickery, you can manage to get there. So I think that's that goes with what you were saying of like rewarding people for taking risk, for trying to not play the game as it's supposed to be, but kind of
exploring having
how
fun.
You want it to be. Yeah.
Did that play into the decision not to have a mini map, or is there a map and I'm just an idiot that couldn't find it?
There is. Aha. There's a map for developers.
Oh, so, see, I'm not that big of an idiot then.
So on our end, we've got the map. Because let's face it, after a few runs, you're like, I don't want to go through the entire level to just find that room to see if this thing is working. So there's a map on our end, and we chose not to put it into the game because we also designed the game so that it's kind of how to say that. Each of the little panels, the rooms that you're going to explore, they're their own little adventure. So there's not really we didn't want to turn it into something like go there and then you just storm through the rooms and get to where you wanted to go. We want people to come into a room and think, oh, okay, I'm going to solve this room. And solving it means killing everyone, basically. But how am I going to, you know, like work around this room? And then when I'm done with it, I'm moving on to another room. And then I'm doing the same process instead of, you know, trying to go somewhere and kind of breaking that frame by frame sensation of playing. I don't know if it works, but that's what we were aiming at. So yeah, here's the explanation behind the no minimap.
I actually appreciate that there's no map because it keeps me just focused on moving forward instead of as much as I love to explore. I don't get as much of that shiny object syndrome in this game because the game, it just feels like the game is always moving you forward and moving you in a direction of somewhere new and something you haven't seen yet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but then I get anxiety about all the shit that I left behind.
I feel sometimes it can become a bit of how to say that? It can be sometimes difficult when you feel like you've cleared a lot of areas and you didn't get to use the boss portal or, you know, the next, the core. But we felt we decided on a balance there, and I hope it's good enough. I'm always having my doubts, but, I guess if people like it, that's how I'll feel we've made it.
Cole, did you remember your old question yet?
Yeah, that was a mini-map question I asked.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought that was just a new question that you came up with all on your own.
No, No, I'm good. I'm following the flow of the conversation, Joe.
I am proud of you. I am proud of you. We're bad at our jobs.
I'm a professional. I have done this like 18 times in the last 3 hours, so we're doing great. I'm surviving.
Talktober is doing great, man.
Stop calling it that.
I can't stop. Talktober. I love that name. I'm such a terrible person. Oh, tell us about all the new content that came to the game in the 2.0 Uprising update. What makes this Uprising as opposed to just Fallback?
So, as the biggest difference is the fact that you're now going to level up your classes. And they're so different from the initial different class that we had in the first game. And then there's been a big work into making the different, so there's a different levels, more coherent. So in terms of classes, we've got, 7 classes in the game, 6 or 7.
Wow.
Not even sure. But basically they've got, their gameplay is completely different and you've got to unlock them, by gathering as much, experience, during your runs. And they are, basically, in the first iteration, they had small difference, but it was more gimmicks. Like, and now they've got a full experience of their own. So that's the biggest thing. And the second thing is that before you would walk through the games and the rooms would be different, but sometimes you would go from a stone environment to something completely different with a lot of metal, and then to something more. Use the farmlands that you'll see, and we've created more rooms so that we were able to create a first environment, a second environment, and a third one. And then on top of that, we've now got the core sectors where you can either choose to go to the next level, or you can choose to deep dive into one of them and go for the boss of that environment. And so the gameplay loop is a bit different, and we think that in terms of how it plays, it's a bit better because you've got to learn the behavior of all of the enemies specific to one level. So you might not feel it as much in the early levels, but toward the end, some levels are really focused on one type of enemy. So for instance, we've got one that's they all basically have flamers. And that changes your gameplay completely because it deals the percentage of your max health. So all of a sudden, you're like, how am I going to deal with that? I know I've got to go through this level. Am I going to try to build more around shield? Am I going to try to avoid enemies as much as possible? And your gameplay changes around that. And yeah, those are the two main differences that we tried to bring with the Uprising version.
And tell us about all the different classes that there are. You said there's, what, 6 or 7?
Yeah, I think there's 6. So there's a sapper. There's the... let me think. Seismologue, Technophobe, the Geometer, the Holomaster, and the Biochemist. That's 6 or 7. Can't count. and I've had coffee, so. So basically, really quickly, the Sapper is your average guy, but he can have a heavy loaded attack that deals fire damage to the enemies, and otherwise, he's got the basic kit. His third attack deals additional damage, and he's got a big AoE on his Fury. So he's a guy you're going to learn the game with and you're going to play. The Seismologue is the one with the extra long sword that acts as a gun as well. And so he's more of a distance specialist. You're going to try to play with just being on the right distance with the enemy. So if you hit with the tip of the sword, he's going to deal additional damage. And then with those two class, you unlock the next two, Technophobe and Geometer. Geometer is more of a tank. When you hit with him, he reloads his shield. And the Technophobe is more of a rogue. So when you do backstab damage, it deals additional damage and he can go into a stealth mode. He's quite cool. He's my favorite. And then you unlock two more classes and spoiler, by the way, but the Holomaster is the one that's going to play around the Vesta. So he's got an AoE that deals damage based on your Vesta that you've collected. And when you hit an enemy with his sword, you loot a bit of Vesta, even if you don't kill him.
Oh.
So he plays, around this resource. And the biochem, which is also one I really like. He's got a, he doesn't deal damage straight with his stack, but he applies poison stacks based on his attack damage. And so, and then he can, his secondary makes you pop those poison to deal immediate damage. And so basically you're going to stack poison on people and then you're going to blow them up. And it's really interesting because you don't have that, one shot potential of just going to an enemy and, killing him, but you've got much more damage, overall, on long fight or on pack of enemies and stuff like that. So it's quite, I like him. I think he's a very enjoyable.
Poison them and blow them up. That sounds fantastic.
Yeah. What more could you ask for?
Oh, man. I got to unlock that one. Yeah. How do you unlock that one? What do I have to do? Tell me.
I think it's goes Seismologue, Geometer, and then Biochemist.
Ah, so it's going to take me a while.
Well, the thing-
play it on easy, bitch. I already have him.
I think one of the things we did is we didn't want to block people from really getting to that content. So you don't have to max your level on one of the class by level 5 if you just spend 1 point on each of the skill tree nodes. You can unlock the final like the next character. So yeah, basically, you just have to go level 5, and then you're there. And yeah, please play him. He's like, I think it's tons of fun. Really, really.
So the game first came out last year. It's been out for about a year now. And you just partnered up with Microids. What happened there that you guys partnered up with them like after the game already came out? What was the conversation there?
So when we created Fallback, it's our first game as a team. So we wanted to make sure that we were able to, you know, work as a small indie studio, get our knowledge and our love for gaming together, and from there be able to actually ship a game, which is not an easy feat. And so we went through that whole process. We had our ups and downs, and at the end we had that we finished our first version, and we were like, hey, this is our business card. This is our first game. We can now go and talk to people. We're real game makers. And one of the things that was really tough as an indie studio is we had the skills to make games. We didn't have the skills to market games.
Mm.
And we really felt it. It's not something you can improvise on. So we released a game. We had a small community, which was great. Shout out to to the first people who actually played our game. They were, lots of feedbacks, a lot of very supportive comments, and they were able to tell us also what they didn't like. And we felt, there's something to do here. Maybe we can improve. And so we spent a bit more time. We discussed amongst ourselves and we said, okay, we can't just keep on, you know, developing the game on our money. And the game wasn't making enough for us to, a continue development. So we had a chat with a few publishers. And Microids has been in touch for a while. And we said, oh, they've got that new indie section that's coming out. So Microid Indie. And they said, let's do something with your game. And so we started redeveloping the game talking with them. And so now it's out in the second version. That's how it all happened.
And it's like a brand new start for the game.
It's a brand new start. It's a brand new start for players as well. One of the things that we didn't do was transferring the old saves into the new system.
Ooh.
So I've seen because it's so different. So we're still, you know, we are adapting around that. Maybe we can think of a system where this could be integrated. So we're still, you know, we're still thinking about how we want the game to evolve. But yes, we've bring something to the table that's clearly different from the initial version, and we hope people like it.
Well, I'm enjoying it so far. Cole, what are you thinking?
I've had a blast with it. I like roguelikes in the first place. I appreciate that there's difficulty settings, so I don't have to sit and complain about how hard it is. I can just go in and do a run or two, blast through some stuff, and then turn it off and go back later.
I mean, I lose some enjoyment because I don't get to hear her bitch as much, but...
Look, at least it keeps us out of trouble if I'm not bitching that a game's too hard.
Oh, boy. We're never going to live this down, are we?
Nope.
Oh, so
I'm curious to what your first impression of the game was, because we hope it's different from a lot of other stuff that's out there. What would you say was your first few minutes on the game like?
The first few minutes, I was like, what the fuck have I gotten into?
Okay.
I was really roped into the story, but then the moment it drops your character and you're just in the world, and I was like, okay, but now what? Because I'm one of those hold my hand and take me places kind of players. I enjoy roguelikes, but I use maps and I want to know where my shit is, you know? And so I was like, can I go this way? Am I going to die? Am I going to break the game? Cause I have a history of breaking games. And then there just came a point where I was like, I just have to go and see what happens. And then at that point, like the moment I started interacting with the robots and getting into fights and coming across puzzles, I was like, this is my shit.
Nice.
This was the game I didn't know I needed. And it felt good. It took a few minutes because I kind of just had to shed my expectations. And then once I did, I was just into it and there, and I was happy with it.
Yeah, I can relate with what you thought with the story. Like, at first I thought it was going to be very like narrow and restricted, and you can only go down this way, and I thought it was just going to be like a straight path kind of thing. And then it turned into go pretty much where you want, do whatever you can. It's always going to be different. And the more I played it, the more I just, it leads to my next question. Are there console plans for this game? Because I want to play this on my Xbox.
Well, yes, there are console plans.
Yes.
Still, that was a big part of actually, being with McRaids. But we've got to figure out the details. So,
Can I make a special request while I've got you?
Yeah, of course.
If you port it to Xbox and you add achievements, which you should, don't make any achievements to where you have to beat it on harder difficulties.
You want to be able to complete it on the
floor. I want to be able to complete it on bitch mode. And then I will be the happiest fallback player you've ever met in your life.
Well, for now, on PC, that's what you can do. So,
yeah, I don't pay as much attention to Steam achievements. They don't have that same oomph that Xbox ones do for me.
Yeah, they just show up in the corner. Like with Xbox, they pop up in the middle. You get a sound effect. It's a rare one.
Diamond.
Yeah, if it's a rare one, you got that long sound effect that twinkles at the end and makes you feel special.
Yeah, like
actual reward. Yeah, I'm with you on that one.
It's a dopamine hit.
It is
like getting a like on Twitter.
even trophies on PlayStation, they just aren't as satisfying as achievements on Xbox, I find, because they're not as prominent. You don't celebrate them as much on PlayStation.
I'm
curious now how many of the achievements I unlocked, because I did have quite a few on Steam. It's just I was like, oh look, achievements, and then I went on.
Yeah, Jordan in chat saying that he agrees on the whole difficulty achievement thing. I'm a fan of when games don't do that as well. I'm not a big, I don't know, I like easier game. If I could play your game on easy mode and still get the full experience, I'm happy with that. I appreciate when there's harder difficulties for people who want to challenge themselves, but I don't want to feel like I'm missing out on quote unquote completing the game just because I prefer playing it on an easier setting.
Mm-hmm. No, I completely agree with that. I think that's one of the, two things. The first one is I definitely agree. People set their own challenge. It's like, but we want to reward everyone. I don't think it's the game developers to just go out and say, hey, you've got to do that extra hard stuff and you're going to get rewarded only if you do it. That's a personal vision. I feel like if you want, if your own challenge is beating games on a hard difficulty, so you just play hard. You can't change the difficulty in game anyway. So you just do your, like, your save is going to be your hard save, and you're going to know you're for yourself that, hey, I've beaten this game in this mode, and, you know, that's my achievement. But if you just want to, I wouldn't say relax, but sit back a bit. I feel like it's fair to also give people, the full experience, not just say, hey, you're not really playing my game if you're not playing it on hard.
No.
The devs that need to hear that are the devs that won't listen to this show.
You mean all of them?
No, we know there's been a few come on the show and be like, hey, I'll listen, and it's like, okay.
Why?
There's some really good points. Because we really do have some good points, especially when it comes to accessibility and stuff, that I don't think a lot of devs take into consideration. And it's nice to hear one say, oh, yeah, no, I don't care what difficulty you're on, just have fun.
It's, people are going to have a blast me for that, but I remember going with, one day it was an expert in, wine testing, and basically the guy, it wasn't wine, it was whiskey, and the guy was really a really huge guy in this world. He knew everything, he was recognized and everything, and it was like, you know, some people like to drink it like that, and starting to ask what was the proper way of drinking whiskey. And what he was telling me was like, hey, don't listen to anyone, as long as you fucking enjoy it. And you know, that's how I feel about video games as well, is, come on, you're playing the game for yourself. Like, of course, we're giving you the tools and the environment to do it, but when it comes to rewards, I feel like set your own challenge. And everybody sets their own challenge, and I think that's a great part of it.
And that's why I love difficulty settings.
Yeah.
My challenge is bitch mode.
So how long has the game been in development? It's been out already for a year on Steam. How long was it in development before then?
It's been on Steam for a year, and we've developed it for 2.5 years before that.
Gotcha.
So yeah, it's 2.5 years plus 1 year.
How has things changed over the past year with COVID in terms of your development?
It was difficult to not be able to be with the guys. Before that, we were all working in the same environment. And now that we're at a distance, I feel like it was difficult to, we kept doing good things on our own, but I feel like we could have done so much more if we'd been keeping the dynamic, you know, of just, hey, look at what I've just done. Hey, maybe you should tweak it just a little bit. I think that was difficult. That was the biggest difficulty. I think also it was good because, hey, people were staying at home and people were playing video games and we're like, hey, we've got something just for you. We're trying to, play our part in terms of how we could have people have a better experience during those difficult, weird times.
Do you feel that COVID had an effect on your sales at all over the past year?
Well, it's difficult to say. We did a little event during the COVID times, so this event had an effect on our sales, It meant also that we made no money during that. Basically, we did a huge sale over 10 days, I believe. And during that time, we made like almost no money.
Wow.
But we got the game to a lot of people, and I hope that was a good thing. I hope that it didn't make the time worse. Being stuck at home with Fallback. Ha, oh, horrible.
But, play this shit again. Huh, I'd rather get COVID.
So yeah, otherwise it was I'm through with that. I just hope it's gonna be over soon, and that's my biggest wish at the moment. I think video game is gonna do great in any situation today. Video game is such, especially indie games, there's so much to do. so much thing that we haven't explored. It's a great time to be in the industry. It's a great time to give players new experience, new ways of enjoying themselves, basically. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy that this virus has had such a negative effect on so many industries, but video games seem to be thriving and doing better than ever because of what's going on, where people are restricted to staying inside their homes and, you know, chilling out at home.
Yeah, exactly. They've nothing better to do than just launch a game.
Yeah.
And I'm guilty about playing video games because, hey, they're on their own. They've got plenty of time. What are you going to do? Just play video games. So, yeah.
Yeah, and as Vincent in chat is saying, the game's on sale too.
Yeah, the game's as a sale right now. So, of course, go get it now. this is your only move. No, but I think I'm a bit biased, but I think it's good value for money.
Oh, I think it's a crazy value for the money. Yeah. Only being $10 right now. I know there's been talk of possibly increasing the price by the end of the year with all the added content that's come to the game, which even $15 I think is absolutely worth it for this game. But being on sale right now for $7.50, I will tell people if they're interested in this game, they need to jump on it because $7.50 for this game is insane. Well, y'all are crazy.
That was also well, yeah, that's what Microid keeps telling me. It's like that's too cheap. No, being serious about it, we're gonna probably get the price up when we get it to consoles as well, so that across the board is kind of the same price for everyone. But we feel that the PC community has been great to us. And as I said before, the initial intention behind this game was to tell people, look, this is what we can do. Like, come pay us a visit. You'll have value for money. You'll be able to have a great experience. And, you know, I don't want to say start making a name, but get people interested in what we do so that our next game, which is going to be insanely expensive. I'm kidding. is going to get more people like interested.
It'd be great if developer came on. It's like, yeah, our next game is going to be $140. Why? Because our last game was $10. We got to make up for it. So it's going to be $140. Launch discount, 10% launch discount.
Yeah. It's a video game maker with a burner phone and trying to. My first game was cheap, but wait till you see the next one.
Do you guys have a new game in the works already, or are you guys still just focused on Fallback?
No, we are definitely moving on to other projects, but we are still. We've got basically a checklist of things that we want to add to Fallback, and. Some of them are not going to make a big difference, and others are, I think, are great improvements. So we didn't just drop the game and that's it, final version. But
it's out,
we want to be able, yeah, that would be weird. But we want to still be able to create a new something else, a new experience for people.
Any comments of what that might possibly be, or is it too early to tell?
It's just very, very early, but it's going to be awesome. that's everything I got to tell you.
Some questions from chat. The first one, Root Beer is My Jam, is asking, what's your favorite scotch?
Oh, my favorite scotch. I don't know if I've got a favorite scotch. I think my favorite scotch is going to be a very cheesy answer. It's the one I drink with friends. I'm not, I can't tell you really on, I'm not a big, whiskey lover, but I love, Bourgogne whites in terms of wines. And if any of you want to try that, it's really, really good. It's like the best whites I've ever had. So, go for it.
Nice. I'm not much of a drinker, but Cole, are you?
Hey,
you-
I am not even allowed to drink because of all the medicine I'm on. But
yeah.
I am from Kentucky, so I have to push Kentucky bourbon here and be like, you have to drink Kentucky bourbon or there's something wrong with it.
Of course.
Another question. Go ahead.
I was gonna say, what I did drink, I had I had a fondness for banana flavored rum. Mm. That was my shit. And I was like, I drank it like twice.
I am a fan of coconut rum. Coconut rum and Mountain Dew mixed. I love it.
Oh,
I call it Nut Dew.
Terrible. Oh, that sounds terrible. Nice.
It's delicious.
I've had some weird experience coming to the US and what you did with drinks and stuff like that. And I think the most special one for me coming from France was, you know, some of you guys put vanilla ice cream and then I think it's Dr. Drew or something like that, like some type of Coke with it, like vanilla ice cream and Coke. Do you know what I'm talking about or not at all? It was in Texas, to be honest.
No, I'm not sure.
Well, that was a weird experience. And I was like, But so
it's kind of like a root beer float or a Coke float, but yeah, with alcohol in it.
No, there was no alcohol. It was root beer. No.
Oh, just a root beer float.
Oh, I thought you were talking alcoholic.
Yeah. Okay. I was like, there's alcohol in it?
Yeah.
I had one time it was like Bailey's Irish Cream and Kahlua. It was the gingerbread martini. And we had went out with my sister for my birthday and she got it and I had a sip or two of it. And I was like, okay, that's basically like chocolate milk. That's the shit that gets you fucked up because you don't know you're getting fucked up.
That reminds me of a shot contest I did at MAGFest the one year. We had to create a shot and have it be video game themed. And my entry was half chocolate milk, half Jaeger, topped with whipped cream, and I called it a Jaeger Bob-omb.
Oh.
Yeah, and it took second place to a Jell-O shot, which I think is cheap because it's a friggin' Jell-O shot, and you can't make that on demand, so I still think I won that contest.
Great. Yeah, well, as long as you felt like you've won, I felt like the most important thing. Yeah, definitely.
And then hard root beer is great from root beer. So another question from chat from a Vincent that we might know that is lurking is asking, how big is the dev team?
So the core team was just 5 people. We had one game designer, 1 3D artist, 2 developers, and then there was me. And then on top of that, we had I think the total team must have been around 10 people for most of the production. So with people coming and helping on other stuff, so like the music, people coming and we had reinforcement for the art as well as for level design. So yeah, I'd say around 10 people over 2.5 years.
Wow, that's a small team.
Yeah, it sure felt very small. That's some of the days were quite long.
Man. So, what are you doing and what are you playing in your spare time when you're not working on Fallback?
Oh, that's a big question. Trying to find
what is this spare time you speak of?
Yeah, exactly.
Spare time?
Yeah. I know someone has mentioned it before. I haven't figured out what it was.
The myth.
Yeah, it's a myth. It's, it makes me think of that picture of a 50 years old, you know, with his hair falling out. And there was the caption was, having your own business is not stressful, John, 23. this is how I feel at the moment. No, seriously, though, we play quite a lot of board games when we're out of work. So we spend the entire day usually on facing the screen, testing the game, looking at videos of other games as well to know, like, oh, how did they do that? You know, so we spend a lot of time looking at video games. And when we're done with our work, I know I enjoy playing board games with guys from the studio. And then on the side, I actually have got other things writing, but they're not less video games related. So So, like, I like writing. I like I like traveling. I've got tons of stuff. but it's, I feel like one of the perks of actually making video games is being in an artistic industry. You can do, there's a lot of things in your everyday life that you can bring back into your game. Feelings, experiences, and you're like, I want people to feel the same as I do. And so how can we make that happen?
I have a cat attacking my leg. I am so sorry. I have been distracted. I've, for some reason, I've, like, these cats have been driving me nuts this entire episode. Like, I don't know if anyone has heard all the bumping that they've been doing to the mic stand this whole time. Or attacking my, like, my leg is bleeding right now because I, oh, God. So your game Fallback is really good.
Needs more cats.
Yeah, is there a cat I could pet in the game?
Yeah, we don't have any animals in the game. That's true. We probably because most of them didn't make it through the disaster that struck the surface. Sorry for that.
Oh.
Yeah.
All mutants now. They're all disfigured mutant monster pets.
Yeah. <laughs> It's a green reality out there.
Below the surface is Fallback, above the surface is Fallout.
Yeah. We had a few people telling us, hey, your game is just a Fallout ripoff. And we're like, hey, no, 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 no. Don't you go there. It's actually funny because one of our key inspiration was Oddworld. This was one of our key inspiration. And then we thought about other games like... What's the name again? Limbo. Mm. But Fallout was, it's definitely forest was kind of out of scope. Our game is not post-apocalyptic. The setting is post-apocalyptic, but the experience shouldn't be about that. You know, it's not about rediscovering a world that has been destroyed. It's much more, you're in that huge factory. It's much more like, how is it called? Portal in a sense. You know, you're in that huge factory underground. And things are going to happen to you and you're not going to quite understand everything. It's, this is more the vibe we wanted to it rather than, hey, everything has been like fucked up and you then try to survive.
Oh man. Well, I know we've been chatting for quite a while. Is there anything else you wanted to talk about with the game that we didn't bring up?
Well, one of the key things, I really want people to, experience the game. Of course, buy it, but experience it and give us their feedback about it. This is something we really look forward to.
And where can people do that? Do you have a Discord or do you prefer the Steam forums?
Yeah, Steam forums are quite good. I tend to go there a lot. I try to answer to everyone. And I feel like a lot of good ideas have been put on by the community on the Steam forums. So yeah, I think that's a great place. We also have Discord. I can drop the link. Give me a sec. Just bear with me for a moment. I can give everyone's link. And yeah, feel free to chat with us. We love to just answer to people.
We will include the link in our show notes. So if people want to check it out, we'll just read below the video and join the Discord.
Yeah, I wanted to drop it straight into the chat, but I don't seem to have access to it. So next time. Yeah, so I think that's the biggest thing for us at the moment. And, I hope people are just going to straight up enjoy it. That's all I wish for people who are going to buy the games, that they're going to play, they're going to have fun. They're going to struggle in the beginning and think, oh, this stuff. And then they're going to feel like godlike and they're going to feel, hey, I'm going to save the world. And that they're going to have a good laugh. That's,
and then they jump off a cliff on accident.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then you've got that little sound that doom when you die.
No,
yeah, I know about it.
I've bitch.
Exactly. I've been there way too many times. So doom.
Either that or those big bastards with the hammer and the front and back shields that hit you and take off like 3/4 of your health in one shot. Those,
learn to dodge,
rat bastards. Oh, I dodged and they'll still clip me every now and then.
One of the characters you unlock has longer range on their sword.
Yeah.
That's very useful.
I just got to be better. I got to get good, Scrub.
Yeah,
exactly.
I got to prepare for when the console version eventually happens.
Yeah, we'll let everyone know, and I think it's a game that plays really good with a gamepad, actually.
Oh, that's
yeah. I played it with an Elite controller, and I had no complaints. It was perfectly fine. There are a lot of games that we play. I plug in my controller, and it's like, nope. And I'm like, well, fuck this. I'm out.
Good to know.
I have arthritis, and the reason I'm so big on disability or accessibility is because I have crooked fingers from arthritis. I have rheumatoid disease, so I have to use my controller because it causes hand fatigue if I use keyboard and mouse. Mm. And so if I'm playing a game and that's not an option, then I'm just out. I can't play.
Yeah, it kills it for you. Yeah, I know. From the start, we really wanted to make the game as dynamic as possible, and I think it shines with the controller. So. Yeah, definitely. If you guys try it, and you've got, you're lucky enough to have a controller, yeah, please, go and plug it in.
I got Bluetooth, so I didn't have to plug it in.
I have to plug. Yeah. My expensive ass rig, and for whatever I did, I didn't include Bluetooth.
Well, the Elite doesn't have Bluetooth, no Bluetooth, does it?
Yeah, it does. I think so.
The original one? I don't think so.
I think so. Look, I'm gonna say it does. And I will fight you. It might not. I don't think my phone has ever recognized it.
Pretty sure the version 2 either is way. The one with Bluetooth.
I plug it in. I don't. Yeah. Yeah. I don't have Bluetooth on my computer either anyway, oddly enough. But
Scrub.
Yeah, I know. No, at least I can beat a game.
True. True. Mm-hmm. Oh, any other questions from you?
No, I think we covered pretty much everything. I think we did good.
We did do good. And I didn't even
we're all barely alive. We did good.
I didn't even overstep my boundaries and ask when it's coming to console. See?
Right?
I know.
Let's say early next year.
Well, I didn't early. Ask, though.
No, you didn't ask, but,
we have a penchant for asking questions that, can get in trouble. Yeah.
But I never said that.
Oh, I didn't hear you say anything. I wasn't paying attention. Yeah, exactly. There were cats attacking me again. He's got to deal with this blood. A rabbit
something around in the background. It's fine. Can you hear him?
Yes.
He's having a party right now.
All the cats are having a party. All the rabbits are having a party. All the animals are having... We need an arc for all the animals we got going on.
Yeah.
Well, you don't know if things
turn out as bad as they turn out in fallback, it would be a shame to lose all of them.
Oh, my Lord.
on the last touch, I think that's something that's that was important to us is when creating the game, part of what we wanted to share with people was the fact that nature was something that was beautiful and that we really hoped that people would take care of it. And taking care of it can mean a lot of things. Like it's not a one-way road. But I feel we wanted to give with fallback. We wanted also to have people want to play it and then be like, hey, I'm gonna step outside because all of this grim and dark and metal and mud and blood is a bit too much. I need something else in my life. And people enjoy both sides of the screen, you know.
Oh, man. Well, I guess we should wrap this up. I know we've been chatting for a while, and Vince in chat is saying that we should wrap it up before you end up saying too much and we get in trouble. So, Florian, thank you so much for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show chatting with us. Everybody else, we're going to take a quick break. We are going to be back with more show. I hope everyone has enjoyed our Talktober. This might actually be the last one for a while. Nothing else is on the schedule. Can you believe it, Cole?
It won't stay that way.
I know.
We're not that lucky.
I know.
It's that time of year.
True. We're going to be back with more show with PartyCast, some reviews to talk about, plenty of stuff there. Shout out to Aloud Snore for dropping 100 biddies in chat. Thank you very much. And Cole, you subscribed earlier. Thank you for that.
Fucking yeah.
But yeah, thank you for the biddies. George, tell us about the biddies.
Drop it, bitch!
effects.
Thank you, George. I played a sound effect. I'm just explaining that because you have no clue what the hell I'm talking about. Yeah, thank you so much for joining us. It has been an absolute pleasure having you on. Do you have any final words to end the interview?
Well, just thanks to you guys, because it's great to have had me live, and I hope that everybody enjoys the show. Thank you very much, and I hope we'll get to chat another time.
In these uncertain and troubled times of uncertainty, we stand together with our workplace heroes who make the wettest pancakes either side of the Mississippi flow straight to your dinner table with our exclusive curbside pickup. Joe Cam's Pancake House. Wet pancakes, no matter what.
That's all right, well, I'm gonna start recording so that we don't lose any material.
Any precious material.
Yes. Lord knows what kind of wonderful things y'all can say.
Aquamarine, or I don't know, tungsten.
There you go.
Iron.
Wait for him to hit record. That's too good.
Copper is the cheap stuff. You don't need that on the show. Then again, it sells for a fair bit when you steal it from houses and recycle it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I worked in metal. Copper's expensive, yo.
It's kind of funny, too, because, like, I swear, like, copper was considered to be cheap metal. Like, isn't that, that's pretty much where the whole idea behind the penny being made of copper is, like, yeah, it's the cheapest, crappiest metal there is. Just mass produce a bunch of one-sit doubles. I thought it was at one point.
It costs more to make a penny than it's worth.
Yep. Pennies are dumb. They should abolish them.
Yeah.
But then you won't have anything to throw in the fountains to make very cheap wishes.
Hey, maybe don't do that.
Yeah.
No, I need to. You take 100 pennies, that's like 100 times the value.
Hey, you know what? Just throw that change into my pocket, and you have just as good a chance.
That's not true at all. I'm just giving you money.
Yes, it is.
Very
wishes might come true. Make a wish. You don't know. Go. Have you tried it?
I have.
Tim's magic pocket.
It failed. It failed so much. I did try it. You just forgot, though, because you don't want me to. You didn't want us to invalidate your magic pocket of wishing. So, but it happened.
I never advertised it as such. I just said it's equally magical to any fountain you might find.
He changed the name, you see. He changed the name. Originally, it was Magic Pocket of Wishing, but now it's something else, like the Twinkle Pocket of...
It's Tim's Pocket of Money Taking.
There it is. The most accurate of titles.
It's just my pocket.
Tim's Pocket.
I mean, the solution is clearly we need to go back to the gold standard.
Yes. Sounds great. Let's go. It's
give me gold. That's magic, that's a great pocket. Standard.
Fucking yeah.
Just give me that money. Give me
right
the gold.
Now.
Fucking yeah. Yes. I mean, wait. Maybe.
Not even recording yet, and I'm doing.
I was about to say, did we start recording? No. We said
you
material.
Were
going
to start.
It's recording, so now, but there's no good way to segue. Fuck it, whatever. We're keeping all
now,
of it.
Now it's going to get bland. Like, hi everyone. I like apples. They are healthy and quite filling due to the fiber that they contain. You also like apples?
Well, I mean, I have to have some sort of segue into it because we had an interview. So shout out to Florian at Endroad for coming on, chatting about Fallback with us. That was fun, wasn't it, Cole?
Yes, it was.
If you remember it.
I fucking don't.
Me either.
This is not one of those things.
I'm drunk.
That's not true. I enjoyed the game. I enjoyed the chat, so it was a good time.
Yeah, it's a pretty badass game. I'm looking forward to that hitting consoles, though.
More, please.
Yes, definitely more. It's cool that a year after release, they put that much work and effort into making it like a whole new, brand new experience. It's really cool. Mm-hmm. See, don't give up on your dreams, kids. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's PartyCast, as you could tell. Pernell's here, Chris is here, Tim is here. How's everyone doing?
Well, I like apples. Do you like apples? Apples are great.
Apples are pretty good.
They're delicious, right? What's your favorite? I'm a big fan of Granny Smith's.
Okay, so people are going to get mad, but I am basic, so I
Red
actually
Delicious.
Do like Red Delicious. Yeah.
Oh my god. Fucking, I what? Know. Nobody likes...
Everybody knows the Pink Lady apples the best.
I think all apples are good, but I default to Red Delicious.
Wow, Chris, you're one of those.
I can't believe you just said
that. I can't, it can't be faulted, though, because, I mean, you're paying the least for a quality bag of apples if that's your favorite, so no fault there. Fuji's aren't cheap.
There's a certain flavor that they, like, bring to the table that I enjoy. It's subtle, but, you know, I like subtle. Like, I mean, I'm the kind of person that I like to drink, like, a vanilla milkshake. Like, I'll pay my whole $5 or $6 and just be like, just vanilla, please.
Nothing's wrong with that.
That's good. Vanilla, yeah. See, people have a misconception on vanilla in regards to flavor. Like, I don't know what era it became decided that vanilla was just like this plain flavor, but vanilla's not plain. You want plain, get plain yogurt. Like, I literal think that plain.
Was, yeah. I think that plain. Was the moment, like, when sexual deviancy started to spill into the mainstream. And if you weren't a deviant, you were vanilla. Oh, and right. We were all like, vanilla's bad.
Baby, look here. I'm getting down with that mint chocolate chip. Bang, bang.
You know, I read up on this vanilla stuff. It actually sounds pretty fun.
Not too complicated. You get in, you get out, it's done. Have another bowl afterwards if you feel lucky. Everybody's good.
Yeah.
If you go for Rocky Road, you're flipping upside down, hanging out the window, the ambulance shows up, nobody understands what's going on.
I'm just it's saying just variety is the
same. Nobody can afford an ambulance.
Touché. It'll get you going, and it'll keep you done.
It'll save your bank account when you don't have to go bankrupt for paying for the ambulance.
Yeah, exactly.
I like Empire apple. I don't know if you guys have those. I think that's a Northeastern thing.
Have you guys had crab apples?
Yeah.
I love crab apples, and most people don't like them because they're
Wait. You actually eat the crab apples when they fall off the tree? We used to throw them at each other.
I've eaten them. I climbed up a tree and eaten one.
You know, the funny thing here is that they'll fall off the tree, and the ones that are rotten on the ground, the deer will eat them and then get drunk from them.
Nice.
Yeah, it's, and you have drunk deer wobbling around. Trees. It's funny.
Hey guys, look at that trash. I'm going to eat it.
It's funny.
I'm good to cross the road.
They are never good to
cross the road. I only have fun, man. I'm good. I only have fun.
But yeah, the deer will actively seek those out. It's really funny.
Like you hear a tuba at some point. It's like, oh, there's a drunk deer coming. I can hear it.
What was your apple, Tim? Empire apples?
Yes.
What are those like?
They're a bit more on the tart side. Not like super tart, but
like a king.
I just really like them.
Mm.
So I use for eating. I don't use them for cooking. I use Cortland's for cooking generally.
That's one I haven't heard in a while, actually.
Yeah, they're not in season. They don't have them very often. They must have a pretty brief season. Cortland. That's what my grandma always used to cook with. So yeah,
I'll tell you the odd things though. Those freaking abomination fruits that are delicious, but they're a crime against nature. Freaking like you know, like grapes, yeah, grapples and apples that taste like honeydew melon. Like who's making this shit? Cotton candy apples,
like cotton candy grapes. I've seen those. Yeah.
The girls like those. I think they're incredibly sweet, and I don't care for them.
It's like, you eat them once just to see what half man wrought, and then you're like, okay, I'm never doing this again because grapes and apples shouldn't taste like cotton candy. They just shouldn't. If I want cotton candy,
why the fuck are we talking about fruit on a video game podcast?
We're doing
Fruit Ninja tonight.
I was going to say, I thought this was a breakfast cereal podcast.
Touché. See, there we go. So, blueberry, frankenberry, or chocolate gum, Count Chocula. Who's your favorite?
I miss s'mores.
Captain Count Chocula.
No one said Fruit Brute. I'm disappointed.
We don't get Fruit Brute in my area.
No one does. That's what makes me sad, because he's always the favorite. I think he came back one year as like a, you know, happy anniversary to the monster cereals. Have Fruit Brute, the one you'll never taste again. We hate you. Eat it. It's so baffling. I hate when companies just like, we have three flavors that are okay, but they're not the best. So, limited time only, here's the best flavor. And then we're just going to hide it again, put it back in the Disney vault, you know, just for no reason. Because why not?
I love that this is the topic you guys are going with this week. Like, come back from break. We have an interview. and it's just right to fruit and cereal. Like,
it's honestly,
I was saying cereal is a joke, but you know,
I can go all in on this. Every joke topic you can come up with, we can make it happen.
So I know, which is really, really sad when you think about it. Like, we're way too knowledgeable at way too many things. It's just kind of sad.
It makes you interesting. Imagine if it was someone was like, I know football, and that's it. And it's like, okay, let's talk about, I don't know, basketball. The bowl. Like, well, there you go. That's a problem, isn't it? But we're like cereal, candy, freaking fruit-flavored other fruit. What's your favorite dental floss? The weirdest ingredients you've ever had in a bottle of lotion? I mean, there's all kinds of shit, and it's all for the taking. So at that point, it's like we choose to talk about video games, but baby, we're multifaceted on this show.
That's very inspirational.
SML, so much lotion. And we're going to talk about body products today. I should get Ashley in here to talk about body butter.
Body butter. What I want to be smooth on the street or basted in the oven. Body butter.
We actually just sent out a package to the Romancevania team with some of Ashley's body butter for them to check out. And so
look forward to the DLC. Body butter. Body butter mania.
Well, one of their tiers for the Kickstarter, like the, I want to say it's like the $300 tier, $200 tier, something like that. It includes like chocolates and body butter and bath salts, and it's like date night.
Wait, aren't bath salts like that really terrible thing that makes people into zombies?
Yes.
Yeah, but only
the drug one, yes. The non-drug one is like scented Epsom salt.
Oh, that's the vanilla version.
Yeah. And you can get them in vanilla. But you can also get them in wild ass scents too, like
I totally
Rocky
heard that.
Road ambulance ride.
I seriously heard that you can get it in wild ass too. Mm. Like, well then, that's a party.
I mean,
wild
Rocky
ass
road ambulance ride. So go ahead, Joe, you can give that one to Ashley free on me.
Wild ass.
Get that wild ass bath bomb. Boom. Oh.
I don't want to smell wild ass.
But it's a bath bomb.
There you go. That's an espionage bath bomb. You just switch it with the vanilla.
They could do a whole lot. They've been marketing all wrong here, right? Like, they've been marketing like, oh, you know, this smells good and it's relaxing and it's pretty. But they should go like the call a bath bomb, have one scented and call it the F bomb, or have.
What's this is relaxing.
Have a scented candle and my last fuck, and it's burning.
Jesus. Mercy. Yeah. I'm not sure if that's worse than McDonald's pickle. I mean, it could go either way, I guess. But again, you could have eaten McDonald's pickles after the last fuck, and it would have been a combined fragrance.
See?
Yeah.
So
hey, is it apple cheese? Apple what? Ooh, something happened.
What happened?
Oh, I just heard a beep. I wasn't sure if something happened.
I didn't hear a beep. Did anyone else hear a beep?
No. Beep. Mm-mm.
That's all that matters. Then we're safe. And for I now? Need to go see a doctor.
Did you take your special meds today?
I need a doctor. Help me, Doc. It's happening again.
Well, oh, my Lord.
Before this gets too much further off the rail, should we get to the reviews? Because there's a lot of games to talk about tonight. This week is going to really be crazy.
Dark. Is an ambulance on the rails?
No.
Bananas, baby.
So, reviews? Yay? Nay?
Yeah.
Okay.
I guess so. It's not cereal, but it'll do.
Yeah, Jesus Christ. All right. First game to talk about tonight is called Torchlight 3, developed by Ectra Incorporated, published by Perfect World Entertainment, released October 13th on Xbox One, PS4, and PC for $39.99. In Torchlight 3, Novastrania is again under threat of invasion, and it's up to you to defend the Netherrealm and its allies. Gather your wits and brave the frontier to find fame, glory, and new adventures. Purnell and Tim, both of you are going to talk about this one. Who wants to start?
It'll be Purnell.
Purnell, tell us about Torchlight 3.
Tony. In that case, then you're starting Tony Hawk.
Absolutely.
Spoilers.
Yes.
He's like, I'm ready. So Torchlight 3, for those who are not familiar with Torchlight, is basically a game that plays like Diablo. For those who aren't familiar with Diablo, what the hell are you doing? So the idea being that you get to choose from one of four different classes. I end up going with the sharpshooter. There is also a guy who can summon a train, apparently.
I was that guy, the rail master.
You summon the train summoner? Nice.
That was the robot.
Yeah, that's like literally a skill he has out of the box. Is just you push a button and fucking train tracks just pop up and start following around with a train with a gun on it.
See, I'm not going to lie. I feel like I made the mistake with the sharpshooter by comparison. It's like, I can summon ice goblins, but she's not even related to the sharpshooter.
So I wanted to go robot, but my wife and son were both like, no, Railmaster.
Okay. I mean, let's be honest. They did you a favor. You're summoning trains.
Yeah.
But I didn't see what happened with, like, I ended up choosing the sharpshooter. And if I remember correctly in the game, there are two skill trees that are specific to the character you chose. And then there's a third skill tree that's based off of a relic you can choose. They're kind of elemental based, with the exception of one that's called, like, Bane, whatever the hell Bane is as an element. But all poison? Those things, I guess so. It could be poison. That makes sense. Blight or something. Once you pick all these things, you do like a very light customization, you jump into the game proper, and it pretty much begins in earnest. There's a story. I can't speak for you. That's you can answer for yourself because we're both talking about, but I didn't care about the plot. It was very obvious in that regard.
No, that's not really what I'm there for.
It's like, they're solely there just to say, hey, go to this place so you can kill a dude and then go to this place and kill another dude.
It's a means to an end. I know with Diablo, some people get into the lore, but for me, it was just kind of like, you know, moving me from one place to the next to, you know, kill some enemy mobs, get some loot, and this was really no different.
The quests were there
just to tell me where to go next, really.
And honestly, that's pretty much how I utilize them. And at first, I was kind of like, I'm not going to lie, at first I was kind of like, eh, this is kind of
about it.
And but that may well just be because I used the sharpshooter. But after a certain point, the game started to click for me. Because as you level up, you get skill points.
Bless
you. The skill points to unlock new abilities across any one of your skill trees. And as you start unlocking more abilities that are tied to your face buttons, your combos and attacks become a lot more diverse as far as like what you can do in battle. So you find yourself mixing up things, summoning some ice goblins while you're firing like triple beam arrows from the back with a piercing shot to finish them off. And you're just kind of running around just decimating hordes of enemies. And of course, the best thing about all these things is that when you take out enemies, they drop loot. Lots and lots of loot. And when they do drop loot, it comes in a variety of different flavors. You got your basic, which is ultimately sellable trash. You have your rare, which is still kind of trash, given the fact that the other two tiers are awesome, and one of them is actually fairly common, surprisingly. But then there's like the ultra rare, and then there's legendary. They go up in tiers of like, you know, value and stats to kind of, you know, provide your character. But legendaries are particularly special because they also provide a specific like trait that only legendary type weapons can get. And each legendary weapon has its own unique attack trait associated with it. Now, by default, you would be thinking that your inventory options are terrible because you got like a screen of like 16 slots and you'll fill that pretty quickly on a run. However, there are a few things that the game provides you with to alleviate the hit. You can summon a portal to go back to town pretty much whenever you want. So you can go back to town manually, sell some crap, and then unfortunately the portal doesn't let you go back to the action, but it still is a quick way just to get back to town if you're like,
it lets you go back to the action. You could just go right back to your portal.
I hate that because I never did it, which means that I was missing it. I was running back every time.
Yeah, you go back to the portal and then you just hit the trigger and it takes you over. You could go to either your portal or your home fort.
Or to your home fort. Yeah. Butt stained. So there you go, guys. I missed that bit. But
proud I didn't miss you. The fun.
I didn't miss the fun, and that's what matters. And the other thing that you can do to alleviate the hit is at the beginning of the game, you get to choose a nifty animal. You only should choose the alpaca, though, because every other one is milk toast. You're damn right. He's an alpaca. Everything else is like, you get a dog, you get a bird.
Yeah, hey, guess what? Alpaca. Dogs are great.
They are, but I want an alpaca. If I want a dog, I'll go outside and pet one. If I want an alpaca, I'm not going over. I'm not going up to the freaking mountains.
Sherpa. I mean, I could arguably go outside and probably find and pet one.
That is true. I got to come visit you and see the alpaca farm.
I will say this game had far fewer pet options, at least from the start, than the previous two, which was a bummer for me because they had a lot more exotic and weird stuff in one and two, especially had like a ton of different weird ass pets.
That may be a cool thing in itself waiting for them to wait on, because I think what they were gunning for, at least in this one, is as you progress through the game, every once in a while, you'll come across a boss monster that, upon defeating it, you'll come across an animal cage, and the animal cage will reveal a new animal. So if you unlock the fort, you can build a pet stable. And at the pet stable, you can switch animals at will as long as you found them in the game. Mm-hmm. So
that was nice.
I loved that quite a bit, though I never dropped that alpaca baby. But, but the one thing about it, like, even if you find yourself feeling like you didn't really want to use the other animals when you find them, there's still a reason to do it, because animals get four different skills they can equip, slots of which you unlock as you level up your character. So each animal has a default skill that it has embedded on it. You cannot take it off. But the other three skills can be locked with one of the skills that comes from one of the other animals. So if you find a new animal, you unlock a new skill, and that skill can be slotted to one of the other animals if you so choose to do so. So that's just one more area of customization the game has to offer you. In the end, the game ends up being a fairly good time. I mean, it's essentially a game where you'll get a quest, you go to a location, beat the snot out of a bunch of monsters, get gear and level up, contribute stat points to your things, mine for materials, and then use them to build facilities in the fort, which are just kind of augmentation things like get more gold, make yourself more fire and poison resistant. I didn't do a ton with the fort, but what I did do with it was basically spike my gold.
I really didn't care about the fort at all. I didn't mess with it.
I messed with it a little. I was just like kind of built a bunch of stuff, and I was like, all right, I did that. And now I'm going to go.
need to go kill some more monsters. That's what the game's all about. It's like, I mean, I guess it's there for somebody who wants to be like, I'm going to build this, iron great fortress so that people can come and visit and see the cool stuff I built. I'm not that dude. I don't give two butts what people see in my fort. So in the end, I mostly ignored it, but everything else I did end up being enjoyable. I won't go so far to say that this game stands out above the rest, because when you really lay it on the table, it is more of what you love with a few tweaks and twops. But at the end of the day, if that's
that
what
word
you
almost went wrong.
hey, this is a rated G podcast. Lollipops.
Okay, yeah, sure. Cole knows what's up.
Fucking yeah.
Tweaks and twops.
But things like the wacky robot character, the train summoning, and just another element of a game where you can just kind of customize characters to your liking. And for the record, you can despect some of your stuff if you find despectacles, which is a funny name for an item. You can build a thing at your fort and use despectacles to respec certain traits on your character if you misspent, stat points or whatever. So, but the game gives you tons of customization options. Not as customizable in the original game or in two, but still customizable enough that you're going to have a good time. If anything, the only thing I dislike about the customization and how they set it up is that I wish you weren't stuck with the relic at the beginning of the game, because when I started, I was like, oh, there's a lot of cool relics here. I don't really know what will best suit my character.
I hate that. So in any game. It's just I have to make a long-lasting decision now. I don't even know what I'm doing yet. Don't do
this
to me.
Yeah, like, honestly, like, the freaking ice thing I got, I feel like it wasn't even much of a companion for the sharpshooter, because it was like, oh, we can fire five icicles out. Yeah, but the sharpshooter, her whole shtick is firing stuff out. I needed something that lets me do quick melee shit. But, I'm sorry, stuff. Unfortunately, fluke fork that. I'm stopped. I love the good police. But in a sense, I feel like I made a poor choice on my relic. Again, not something that makes the game bad to play, but it does make me feel like I'm not using my character to the fullest. But in the end, I still found the game to be an enjoyable romp. There's a lot of meat in these potatoes if you find yourself wanting to delve into it and play all in, especially if you choose to play the other characters after you beat it with one. What did you think, Tim?
I feel like it's solid. It's fine. I just feel like the returns on Torchlight have been diminishing ever so slightly since the original Torchlight, which at the time was awesome. I played on Xbox Live Arcade, and it was felt really good at the time. I think it came out like just before, like right around when Diablo 3 came out. I think it was maybe like a bit before.
I think that was a lot of where that love came from, too, because like, I was down with that, too, and it was like, ooh, better than Diablo 3, because I got the customization still.
Yeah, well, it was like some of the people that worked on like the first Diablo, and it was like very straightforward. You're just going straight down into this dungeon. It just hit at a good spot at a good time when there wasn't like a lot of these games out there. But since then, like even when Torchlight 2 came out, like there had already been like a resurgence. Like Torchlight laid down like the first stone in the path, and then a bunch of other developers were like, oh shit, like it's time. And you know, Diablo 3 turned itself around and became quite a bit of fun, and there's a number of other games out there in the space. So even when Torchlight 2 came out, it kind of felt like, okay, well, this is solid. You know, you're doing your thing over here, Torchlight. You have your steampunky world. There's some fun goofy stuff. I like stuff with the pets. But it just didn't have that same like punch as the first one, because it was already starting to kind of fade back into the pack. And then it's like, you know, now in this day and age, there's a bunch more of these games. Like Path of Exile is huge, allegedly. I hear about it a lot. Oh, it's like, I don't play it, but I hear people talking about it. So, and I see stuff about it all the time. So that seems to be like the hot business right now. And now you have Torchlight 3 trying to bump in on that space. And it's still like, you know, I enjoy, I'm not going to say that I don't like playing a character where I'm dragging around a train behind me and like all of the Railmaster's upgrade or grades or, you know, adding different cars to the train.
I have to restart and play with this guy now.
Yeah.
You're really selling him on me.
The funny thing, though, is here you talk about the Railmaster. It gets me to thinking that what this game should probably be doing, it should be setting itself apart from the rest by just going all wacky with every character. Like,
yeah,
it sounds like the Railmaster is like the primary character for wacky, and the other ones are just like archetypes of other characters in other games. But
mayhaps. Like, yeah, maybe that is the thing, like that they need to lean into more. But I know this. I feel like this game had like a lengthy early access period, and now it's out and like playing it. Like, yeah, no, it's a fine time in that genre, and like, I don't really have much to knock on it other than like, it's not, I didn't find it to be like incredibly exceptional.
I have just a gripe.
Oh, gripe it.
I do not like the fact that the single player and multiplayer characters are separate.
Oh, fuck that.
I do dislike that.
I didn't realize that because I didn't get into multiplayer. I was just playing solo. That's me.
Yeah. If you go to start a multiplayer game, you have to make a new character in it.
Oh no.
And it is.
Why?
And that's vice versa. I feel like it'd be good if you could like be multiplayer, but then move it to single player at least. But the fact that it's,
well, I guess at least when you play multiplayer, you could still voluntarily just play by yourself. You just have the online aspect, like when you go to towns and visit forts. But I don't like that they separate characters like that.
Yeah, I don't like that. I don't like that either.
I get kind of why they do it, but I still dislike it. Because I'm assuming that they usually do that because of people who want to like mod their character and crap. And they're like, okay, you have a single player playground in which to do that, but just don't bring it to the multiplayer set.
That or to keep people from boosting a multiplayer.
Maybe. But $40, I need a verdict on this. Pernell, Tim, what do you two think?
I mean, honestly, I feel like if you're hunting for another game like this, you're not gonna feel remiss for buying it as it is. So I would give it a buy it, however, with the caveat that, like Tim said, it's not going to light your fire in a way that makes you feel like, oh, this is a whole new experience. This is a fantastic game. It's just, it'll scratch an itch if you've got that itch.
Yeah, that's about right. Yeah, it's like a light buy it, really. It's like you can't really raise much of a hand against it, but, you know.
It's good. It just doesn't set itself apart from others.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fine.
All right. Next game to talk about is called Crash Bandicoot 4. It's About Time, developed by Toys for Bob, published by Activision, released October 2nd on Xbox One and PS4 for $59.99. It's about time for a brand-wumping new Crash Bandicoot game. crash forward into a time-shattered adventure with your favorite marsupials. Neocortex and Entropy are back at it again and launching an all-out assault on not just this universe, but the entire multiverse. Crash and Coco are here to save the day by reuniting the four quantum masks and bending the rules of reality. Tim, tell us about Crash Bandicoot 4.
Crash Bandicoot 4. Man, I was such a huge Crash Bandicoot fan back in the day. Does anybody say that? I don't, because I wasn't.
I like the original Crash games. I thought they were really good.
Unlocking all the gyms was a fun time.
Yeah, I like playing a bit of the first one. I really liked Crash 3. I really liked Crash 3. I don't remember why. Exactly at this point. It was 20 years ago, but yeah, I played quite a bit of Crash 3 and I really enjoyed CTR. But yeah, I don't remember much about it other than that, but yeah, whatever, who cares? It doesn't matter if you've, enjoyed Crash in the past. It might matter slightly. Cause there's a lot of characters in this game. I'm just like, I don't know who that is at all. I'm just kind of guessing that, like, oh, I know, you know, his main, I know Cortex. I'm like, that's the main bad guy. I feel like I saw the dude with like a rocket stuck in his head in some game at some point. But you know, I haven't really thought much about Crash, up to this point, but, yeah, Crash 4. Yeah. They did the insane trilogy a couple years ago and people really enjoyed that. And, now we got a Crash 4, a fourth Crash Bandicoot. And this game's pretty darn good. So the style of Crash is 3D platformer. It is not like like your Mario style, explore a big open world sort of deal. Crash exists kind of on rails. Like it's not like 2D movement. Like you're still like a little 3D space, but you're running down a hallway, like forward, and then you will platform sideways and kind of go in and out and towards and up the level. But your journey through a level is pretty guided. It's not really exploration based. There is secrets and stuff off to the side if you poke around the edges, but it's meant to be pretty linear. It's more of a 3D adaptation of 2D platforming, more so than the 3D kind of what is a walled garden is what they call those, like Mario 64, Mario Sunshine, Mario Odyssey, I guess, at this point. So yeah, you're going into levels, you're running through like the old Crash games. Yeah, there's gems to get. The sub objective is to break all the damn crates in a level. All those fucking crates. There's TNT crates, which you'll hit those and they'll blow you up. If you hit them wrong, just like the old Crash games, there's nitro crates where it's, you just touch them and they will blow your ass up. It's nice of this game that they have two settings, because they have a modern mode where you basically have infinite lives. And you just, you know, you die, you go back to a checkpoint and then you continue on through the level. They do also have a classic mode where you have a limited number of lives, where if you run out, then you will start the level over, and well, good luck with that. Have quote unquote fun doing that if that's what you want to do. I definitely had sub levels where I was dying like 20 times. Yeah. So the premise of traveling through time is basically how they frame you jumping from like one themed biome to another. It's like, okay, here there's pirates, here you're in a swamp, here you're out in like a futuristic, like Mad Max wasteland sort of deal. So that way they can just kind of jump with a plume between different, settings without much, explanation. I think the graphics of this game look really nice. Like all the levels and the character animations are really well done and just like are very expressive. The levels are interesting to look at. There's lots going on off to the sides. You can generally tell where you're going and what you're supposed to be jumping on. I feel like there's always kind of a bit of a problem whenever you're doing any kind of 2.5D platforming, where sometimes you're like, is that part of the background? Is that on the same plane as me? I guess I'll find out.
Jump, die, whoops.
Jump, yeah, it could, yeah, I did that a couple times.
Crash, damn Dacoot.
Yeah, crash, damn Dacoot. Yeah, I definitely did that a couple times, but not too much, and the checkpoints are pretty generous, if you're not playing on, you know, motherfucker mode. So the idea is you're going through these different worlds and you're trying to like Cortex and his buddies like broke out of interdimensional space prison or someplace where they had been banished. And as you're going through these different dimensions, you are picking up different masks with different abilities. So the first one you pick up has a thing where it will shift things in and out of your reality. You know, which creates platforming segments where it's like, oh, I have to jump and hit the button in midair so the platform I'm jumping to will appear, or I need to hit it twice in midair so that, like, this wall will go out of the way, but then the platform will rematerialize on the other side. That's the first one you get. The second one I get, I didn't like very much. I did not find to be very fun because it just, like, made you spin like really, really fast, but while you were spinning it kept crash just like moving just like a little bit. But that, you know, enables you to do these like super long double jump things that, I don't know, a lot of those levels I was just like, man, I was just like falling just short of the platform I needed to get to after my double jump. I just had a lot of trouble getting the feel for that. But, you know, it's fine. It'll sprinkle. You're not like equipping them. It'll sprinkle them out through the levels as you unlock them. So some might have you like picking up two masks at different portions. It'll just have like a segment. Like, here's the segment where you use this mask, and then like you lose the mask and you do some shit normally. And then it's like, oh, here's another mask bit again, where you need a mask to get through. So they kind of sprinkle.
So this is the sort of thing where like once you unlock the mask, future levels incorporate it into just the main flow, or these like secret routes.
That's just future levels incorporate them. Like you won't see, like it is like in Mario World, where you won't see like dotted boxes where you could pick up a mask in past levels. It's all self-contained and it all just moves forward. So it'll break things out where it's like, okay, well, here's a world where you pick up a mask at the end of it after like three stages, or here's a world where you will fight a boss when you get to the end of it after three stages. It also sprinkles in some guests. I won't say guest characters, just some characters that aren't Crash that have some different abilities. fucking dingo alligator character. I'm not familiar with this guy. There was like some pirate lady with a hookshot who was a lot of fun to play as. And those characters will pop up just kind of over the course of the main path, but they will have their own optional stages you can go and play. There are tapes you will find, like VHS tapes you'll find in levels sometimes that will unlock extra stages. Stages have a lot of stuff you can try to unlock. 'Cause each stage has six gems to get, and if you get all six gems, you will unlock an extra skin for each stage. So each stage has a new skin for Crash associated with it.
Nice.
Which is pretty cool, I guess. I didn't unlock any of them. You have to get like, you know, over 80% of the Wumpa fruit. You have to get all the boxes. You have to not die more than three times. There's a secret gem to find. And then there's another one that I'm forgetting.
Time trial.
Wait, they even made the fruit a collectible in the game there?
Yeah. It reminds me of Rayman. Rayman Legends and Origins did this thing where they had these little things called Lums hidden throughout the levels, and so you had to collect like there was collecting them, and then there was like finding them throughout the level, and if you found them all, then you completed the level, you got all the shit for the level, and that was great. Yay! So it reminded me of that, which is a good thing, because if I liked this game as much as Rayman, which I'm not, that's not a knock, Rayman Legends is like one of my favorite 2D platformers of all time, and I did 100% of I did 100% of everything in that game. The only thing I didn't unlock was like,
that's a lot, actually.
It is a lot, actually. I unlocked every costume. I 100%ed every single stage. The only thing I didn't do was like, there's like a multiplayer achievement that I don't have, and that's it. I just like, whatever, that's fine. But I unlocked everything else. The last thing you unlock in that game is a naked Rayman with a leaf over his junk. Which I've brought up this question on a tangent for years, is Rayman's junk attached, or does it float, like, off his body, like his hands and feet?
I think it would have to float.
You think it floats?
But then again, how would he relieve himself if it floated? But then again, how does he eat when his head floats? I'm confused.
See, lots of questions. Lots of questions. Do we have answers? No. This is a Crash review. So if you are into Crash as much as I am into Rayman, you are going to have an incredible time with this game because there is so much shit to do. Because on top of that, they also have these inverted levels where they remix the level, basically, I'll say. But that gives a whole other set of gems to collect. So there is a lot of stuff to do. Just playing the levels through, and then if you want to start collecting everything on the levels and then doing their inverted level version of the levels and then all the extra levels with extra characters, there is a... This game has a couch co-op pass the controller multiplayer available, which is interesting.
How would that work?
Well, do you remember how like you'd play, I don't know, like Super Mario Brothers multiplayer back in the day, how one person would play Mario, play a level or play it till they died, and then player two would play? Mm-hmm. Like it's sort of like that, except I guess you can just pass one controller around. You don't even have to have four controllers. I mean, I don't know if that's a thing that people did on the PlayStation, was just play pass the controller. I thought it was interesting that was there. And like you can set it like, oh, it's every time you die or every time you beat a level or every time you beat a world, you pass the controller. So I don't know. It's a way to regulate your friendships. if you can't do it yourself, like you need to set fucking rules in your house and like abide by them.
Oh, jeez.
Player two's turn.
But yeah, the game is fun and really well made and is a really good platformer. I was pretty impressed with it.
Well, then $60. What is your verdict?
Yeah, that's well worth a buy. Even if I think you haven't played Crash before, I guess I'll say. I guess if you did play Crash in the past and hated it, like, I mean, this ain't gonna change your mind, I don't think. But it's been 20 years, so maybe it's worth a chance.
If not, the Insane Trilogy is out there that people could check out as well.
You could check that out. But yeah, lots of content, plenty to do. And it definitely, I will confirm, it does have bandicooting in it. which is the gameplay trope where you run at the screen and something's chasing you.
Oh, mercy.
I would expect it to have that.
It does have bandicooting, yes. Many games have bandicooting. I usually tweet about it. If you search bandicooting in my tweets, I'm pretty sure I've tweeted about it like a dozen times over the past 10 years.
Wow.
Dragon Quest XI has bandicooting.
Really?
What?
Yep, there's a part towards the beginning where you get chased by a dragon.
Oh, crap. How did I forget about that?
I don't know. It's like maybe it's pretty early on in the game.
I've owned Dragon Quest XI twice now, and I still really haven't played that much.
You're going to a third time, aren't you?
Yeah, you're goddamn right I am.
Yeah, you're going to buy that shit on Xbox.
You are goddamn right I'm buying it on Xbox.
Little bitch.
You little bitch. Oh, man. All right. Next game to talk about is called Tony Hawk Pro Skater 1 and 2, developed by Vicarious Visions, published by Activision, released September 4th on Xbox One and PS4 for $39.99. Drop back in with the most iconic skateboarding games ever made. Play Tony Hawk's Pro Skater and Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2 in one epic collection, rebuilt from the ground up in incredible HD. All the Pro Skaters levels and tricks are back and fully remastered, plus more. Tim, tell us about Tony Hawk Pro Skater 1 and 2.
Well, this game is a perfect remaster. Just buy it. Done.
All right.
Yes, done.
For $40, your verdict.
No, this game. Yeah. So Tony Hawk's 1 and 2 remaster. Finally, after what feels like for fucking ever, we got a really good Tony Hawk game. Like, man, this series has been in the doldrums for what feels like forever. They whipped out Tony Hawk 5 and that was a disaster. Like they
are we
going
to talk about that? Should we talk about that?
They tried doing a remaster.
Damn, it traumatized these, you.
Like I don't know, some many years ago, and it was just like not the same. But this one is great. This one does it. So yeah, you get Tony Hawk Pro Skater 1 and Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2 in one package. They have been visually updated, looking very good on the modern consoles. They have added, so all the skaters from the original games are in it, as well as a bunch of like new skaters, including Tony Hawk's son. Riley Hawk is in there.
Like what they did to the old skaters, they actually like updated their look, so it's like this is how they would look now. It's not
they're old men. Shows. Yeah, old men. Yeah, they're old people. Like they're 20 years older. It's not just like young Bucky Lasek or whatever. Like no, I mean, these dudes still skate. So, yeah, it's all the original skaters just kind of like, yeah, it's interesting. It's really interesting. Because so, like, one of the things they did, so I'll just say it's the kind of the big thing that held down, like, a lot of the more recent Tony Hawk games, is that the controls and, like, the physics just sucked. Like, in Tony Hawk 5 and, like, the first, like, remaster they did, like, they just did not feel good. They did not feel right. But this game, while it's not, like, 100% perfect with the physics of the originals, it is close enough. Very quickly, I was able to get back in the groove with playing this game and pulling off, like, super long, ridiculous tricks. I guess noteworthy is that it does pack in the, like, all the abilities from the moves from, like, later Tony Hawks. Like, the manual is available in both games. The revert is available in both games, which didn't come along until 3. Spine transfers are in both games. That didn't come along until 4. I think the wall plant came in, like, in one of the thugs. Like, all that shit is in there. All the moves are at your disposal in both games here. But yeah, it controls well. All the, you know, the tricks, the grinding, like, it all feels good and, like, close enough to the way that it should that I ain't complaining about it. So along with just like remastering the games, the game, the levels and the skaters. One thing I didn't notice, like I had to have it pointed out to me, is that they added a bunch of goals to Tony Hawk 1 levels because Tony Hawk 2 had like 10 goals per level. And originally Tony Hawk 1 only had 5. So they added a bunch of stuff to each one of those levels, which is cool, which is great, which is more fun stuff to do. There is you can make your own skater. There's stat points throughout each level for each skater. Each skater has its own stat points. It's skaters are it's they're people. Skaters are people too. Skater has their own stat points to pick up in each level. So you'll need to pop into each level with each skater to pick them up. Customization for your board. There's lots of just goals to hit, like global goals, like outside of just the missions in each level to try out and stuff for you to do. So Purnell, what'd you think of it?
Well, I honestly found myself genuinely enjoying it in the sense that I got back into the groove of what I originally liked about the old Tony Hawk games. I was never what I would call a pro by any means, but the thing I like about Tony Hawk games, or correction, like and loathe at the same time, is the fact that if you're not really big on joining and linking a series of tricks, you can just go on the levels and accomplish goals such as knocking over barrels or scaring the old lady off the steps or something, and knocking enough of those out to unlock other stages. But then as you get more into the game, you're into doing all the different tricks, which doing individual tricks is one thing, but the meat and potatoes of the game is stringing them all together, which results in you having to get perfect runs in order to feel like you accomplished something with the tricks. So that ends up becoming a bit of an obsession. If I didn't get a perfect run for the whole 2 minutes, I wasted my run. But honestly, I felt like it carried a lot of that fun that I had back in the day, doing score challenges against my friends. And it felt great. Like it played well. It just takes a little bit of getting used to if you haven't been at the sticks for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. It took me like maybe a few runs to pick it back up. It is running at a much smoother frame rate than it did back in the day too. So I think there's like a little bit of a feeling of like, it's just like a quicker, a faster feeling game.
All the songs aren't in the game like they were before, but I will say I was glad that the one that I wanted to be in the game was still in the game. I think they
did get them all. I don't know if there's
I think there's like maybe 3 or 4 that are missing. It's not many.
Very few.
And they have new stuff too as well.
Yeah, well, I feel like when they first announced it, they said like, and like this is 2 songs worth of sound, or 2 games worth of soundtrack, so I'm not exactly sure. But I feel like when they first announced it, there were a few missing, but then I think a few weeks later, I think they got it sorted out and they actually did get them all in there. Either way, most of the 90% of the 95% of the songs from the first 2 soundtracks are in there, along with, a bunch of new stuff on top of that. So that's great. And you can pick you can customize like what soundtracks, you want to listen to while you're playing as well.
Just loop No Cigar for 40 minutes.
Do that. You could do that. My only kind of be, and I guess I should say, yeah, I played a lot of Tony Hawk back in the day. You know, I enjoyed one quite a bit, but like Tony Hawk 2 was a nightly ritual with me and my friend in college. Like every night at 10 p.m. was Tony Hawk time. And then we played an insane amount of Tony Hawk 3 when that dropped on GameCube, which was launch day, actually. That was one of my launch games, was the next-gen version of Tony Hawk 3. So we played a lot. My only kind of beef is that, like, so in the originals, you had to, it was there for you to play through, like, the entire campaign with each skater, and it might sound, like, kind of needless to do that in 2020, but it was a fun thing to do at the time, was to, you know, try out every skater, and, like, once you knew the goals, like, I mean, I was tearing through Tony Hawk 2, like, or 2 or 3, maybe both of them at certain points. Like, I could get through every level and get every goal in, like, 30, 40 minutes.
Jeez.
I was good at Tony Hawk. Still am. And just like this, you'll get through, you'll accomplish everything with each skater, and then it's like, okay, well, not with each skater. With, like, one skater, you'll go through. And then it's like, well, I guess I have to run back through and grab stat points for every skater, and then it's like, well, what do I do now? Like, unless you just, like, wipe your save, you can't start over. I kind of wish they had the option there of just like, hey, you know, each skater gets their own campaign, just to kind of give you more to screw around with, because Tony Hawk's just fun to play and fun to pull off tricks and, you know, play around in those levels. So that's the only thing, and it's kind of a weird thing to complain about, but I wish that was intact from the older games.
One thing I did like, though, I feel like you'd have to really, really be into the cosmetics for the game, though, is that they do at least give you a few character only goals that you can use, that you can complete to unlock, like, new gear for them. Yeah. So even if you can't do the level goals over and over again, you can be like, okay, I'm playing as Bucky now. What are Bucky's specific goals? I'll knock those out.
There is that.
Carnage is saying that they do have the speed run mode, so you can do goals as fast as you can.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, that is true.
Minor gripes aside, $40 on it. What do you two think?
Oh, it's formality. Buy it.
Yeah, that's a buy it. Yeah, that is absolutely a buy it. Even if you're, like, new to Tony Hawk, I mean, those are great games that were widely loved by people that did not, you know, I was not a skateboarder. It's just a lot of fun to play. I mean, like, they're almost more 3D platformers than they are 3D platformers that happen to involve skateboarding, really. Fantastic.
All right. Sounds good. All right. Well, Tim, I guess we'll let you get going. Yes. Thanks as always for being here.
I woke up way too early today.
We'll go get some sleep, and we will see you probably next week on the show.
Probably next week. All right. Good night.
Good night, sir.
All right. Well, moving on. Next game to talk about is called Shoot 1-Up DX, developed and published by Mommy's Best Games, released October 15th on the Switch for $5.99. Instead of stowing each 1-Up you collect, each new ship becomes playable immediately, resulting in an ever-growing armada of destruction. With your homeworld ruined, lead your detached battalions charged by destroying the mechanical tentacle hybrid attack forces responsible for your pain. Chris, we did an interview on this one last episode, yeah, so we don't have to go too deep into this, but what did you think of Shoot 1-Up DX?
Ooh, all right. Well, let me prepare my tome here.
Everything is boobs.
Say what?
Everything is boobs. Boobs. Or balls. Or dicks. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of boobs in this game.
Everything is boobs or dicks, basically.
Wait a minute. Is this the same game?
Yeah.
Really?
How did you miss this stuff? The ships are basically penises.
They're kind of phallic, I guess, but I mean, I play a lot of shmups, and they're all kind of like that.
They're dicks.
This is a Shoot 1-Up in a whole nother way.
Well, that wasn't my takeaway from it at all, although there is a boss that's a giant robot lady who does have, like, these big giant turret boobs that, like, shoot after you.
What? Chris, did you play this game?
We're talking about Shoot 1-Up DX, right?
There's literally a boss called the Womb, and it's a uterus with fallopian tubes and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
And then there's the boobs. Like, it's the whole boss is like a woman.
Like, every boss is boobs.
Like,
cybernetic boobies.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Chris is like completely flabbergasted. I'm sitting here going, how did you not notice this?
Chris is like, I'm just playing a shmup. I don't care about the titties. I just want to shoot things.
I mean, God, it doesn't.
Well, you really are vanilla.
He's like, I prefer vanilla bean.
I was going to say, have you played Cho and Iki? I mean, I guess it's sometimes if it's not, like, glaringly obvious. Also, remember that I, like, reviewed, like, unicorns, toilets, and poop, or, you know, whatever. What was it? Unicorns, toilets, and poop? Wasn't that the title?
I don't remember what the name of it was.
Yeah, like, if it's an alien that just so happens to look like genitals, I'm like, whatever. Just one more for the, you know,
throw
one more. Rainbows, toilets, and unicorns.
Yeah, thank you.
It's the whole game. Shoot one of the X's, like, literally just all reproductive organs in some way or another. I don't know how Chris is blunt enough to notice it other than because he's vanilla. I'm looking at these
ships, and they're just, like, shmup ships, and they got a couple tentacles around them. Like, each... Anyway,
you're there's a lot pure, of symbolism Chris. In the game that
you're too pure.
That's the thing, though. I'm not. So that's kind of interesting that everybody's latching onto that. Where I was like, yeah, I could kind of see it. But anyways, OK, so this is a shmup, a mostly vertical shmup. We'll get to that in a second, where you play. Well, you start off with a couple of ships that I guess are just straight up phallic shape or something. Like I said, they kind of just look like shmup ships to me.
I think Cole's going a bit too hard into the dick stuff, but she does draw dicks for a living. So
if anybody can spot a hidden dick, it's me.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Like hidden Mickey's.
But also, like makes them the not really... boss is literally called the womb and is an embryo and opens up into an embryonic sac. And then there's another one that's a fallopian tube and uterus. And
right. Like,
yeah, it's definitely reproductive organs.
yeah. No, I mean, I'm looking at it right now. But it starts off as like kind of a weird like crab boss kind of thing. So I don't know. Whatever. And then there's like broken Gundam pieces on the ground and everything. So it's kind of hard to sense a theme, you know? It's kind of like, but for me, I'm like looking at ships and bullets, you know? Like I'm not really, if you can
Cole's really mind is just in the gutter.
I guess, but I'm also like, you know, how are you not paying enough attention to the game to be able to notice that stuff like that intensely?
I mean, I beat it.
Yeah, me too. I beat it. Well, I beat it again while they were doing their reviews earlier. Anyways. Oh, well, whatever. So the thing about this game is that you know, you roll through it and you shoot and stuff, and your two ships are on the screen at the same time, of course, and every few ships, like, really constantly, and in fact, there's a mode that is called a goof-off mode that you can unlock where this becomes even more rampant. Every few enemies that you defeat or whatever produces a one-up, and if you pick up that one-up, then that adds another ship to your group. Now, the way that this works is obviously if they're just throwing in, like, you know, a bunch of ships willy-nilly, pardon the expression, then, you know, that wouldn't make for a very good game, because how do you control all of them, and how do you keep from getting shot by boobs, I guess? Well, the shoulder buttons by default will allow you to contract all of the ships into just one, like, ship's worth of space, and that you can use to dodge, and then when you're ready to spread out, as it were, you push the other shoulder button, and that will expand your ships into a kind of circular formation that changes as you run up against the you know, different frames of the gameplay field. What am I saying? The edges of the screen. And they will, like I said, it behooves you to spread out as much as you can, because not only do all the ships shoot, but when they all combine together, like, they create this big mega shot that, like, takes down stuff really easily. Whereas you only just have the one shot, like, when you're contracted down to, like, one ship. So, somebody has clipped something. Anyways.
Yeah, I'm scared to watch it. I don't want to know what it is.
Well, it's there on the internet forever now.
Yes, it is. I'll find out after the show.
Yeah. So with the one-ups, you can basically increase your stock of ships to up to 30 per player. This is actually a two-player game, so if you have a second player, you can have another 30 ships, which puts 60 ships in the playing field at the same time. And I actually have There's also a ghost mode, which will also put a mirror image of all of your ships on the screen, which also will give you up to 60 ships shooting at the same time. I am putting a Twitter link in the chat, which actually shows like a small video I took of when I had 30 ships and also the ghost mode, and it's just showing them all go at once. Of course, it wrecks the Switch's, like, you know, video processing ability, but that's okay. Anywho's, so you go through these stages and these gigantic ass bosses, which I guess are all genitals. I mean, I kind of got different things out of them, but like, I guess I'm going to have to rethink that giant worm in,
oh, God.
But anyways, yeah. So once you blow them up and you get through all the stages, then you get an ending and you get to go back. Now, that's basically the gameplay, which is really good. Like I said, it's not quite bullet hell unless you put the difficulty up, which it does have some pretty hellacious like difficulty in serious mode. And of course, there's also a kind of like an organic score trek mode, which gets more difficult as you just keep playing it. And, you know, you just keep playing and playing it. And it'll actually save your progress, too, which is really nice. But the thing about this game that's like really impressive is just the sheer amount of options. Like things like, you know, just customizing the experience in like all kinds of ways, including like all kinds of accessibility ways. So,
yeah, we talk about the accessibility a lot in the interview.
Yep. Yeah, so, you know, we talked about all those. And of course, Robo Girl clothes is an option. You can turn them on or off. But since apparently I don't notice any of these things, I don't know how that changes the game at all.
Maybe you played with them on, and that's how you didn't notice. Like, no, accidentally.
I don't think I did. Anyway, it's
I wonder if it was changed at all for the Switch, because I noticed it has an E10 rating on the Switch.
Does it?
Yeah.
That is
yeah.
not an E10 game, dude.
did you beat it on Switch?
No, I played it on Steam.
Okay.
So I wonder if it was toned down for console. Some ways. I'm sure Nathan will hear this and he'll be like, no, it's exactly the same. And he'll just be like, holy shit, you get away with a lot for E10 now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, it's E10 for fantasy violence and suggestive themes. I don't know. I would have you, I think you should like actually look at like gameplay footage of the Switch version or something, because I'm pretty sure you're seeing, like literally seeing stuff that I'm not seeing. Because this is a, like, I would call it a stretch to say that there's any kind of, like, actual lewd stuff in here, besides a crab boss that turns into a, you know, a, what did you call it? A surgical cutaway, basically. Anyways.
Wait, do the boobs on the chicks laying on their sides have bars across them on Switch?
I don't think they exist on Switch.
In the last stage.
In the last stage? I mean, I don't remember seeing them.
They were all over the background.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, yeah, yeah, they have bars. Yeah, that's right.
Oh, yeah, they don't on Steam.
Yeah. But, yeah, so.
Anyway, $6 on this one. Chris, what do you think of it?
Yeah, I think it's really good. Like I said, most of the stuff that was pretty much covered in the interview, I would just say the game's extremely fun to play, and it's a must-have for shmup fans for sure, because it's a very unique experience that I had a lot of fun with. Also, this game is perfect for people who have heard of this whole shmup thing, you know, boobs and dicks notwithstanding, and want to actually, like, get into the genre and, like, try it out, because this game has so many, like, you can slow it down to 25% speed, you can turn it into turn-based mode where nothing moves in the game until you input something. So you can literally learn how to play a shooter with this game and actually do a really good job with it. So, yeah, I recommend this game. This is a rare shmup that I actually recommend for everybody. It has my, whatever my top tier buy it is, and especially for $6. I mean, come on.
Nice. And yeah. Hopefully we will revisit this one when it hits PlayStation and Xbox in the future as well.
Yeah.
We'll make Purnell play it.
Ooh, I can get down with that.
Well, the next game to talk about is yours, and it's called Zoids Wild Blast Unleashed, developed by Code Glue, published by Outright Games. It released October 16th on the Switch for $39.99. Unleash the wild mecha power and animal instinct of Zoids in a spectacular head-to-head battles on Nintendo Switch with stunning graphics faithful to the Zoids Wild anime and intuitive 3D combat that lets you chain incredible combos instinctively. Zoids Wild Blast Unleashed is the ultimate showdown between your favorite pilots and their Zoids. Hernell, tell us about this one.
Man, I feel like I should have read that description before I played the game. Maybe I would have come away feeling better about it. Jeez. But Zoid's Wild Blast Unleashed is a game that is pretty much at the core of what you typically think about when you consider anime fighter. The way it works is that, and as I didn't get into Zoids back, I only knew about it from the toys and such, so don't quote me for being like, oh, knowledgeable of the universe, but Zoids are basically robotic animals that have humans that ride on them and somehow don't die or get, like, hospitalized from getting into battles unshielded on top of them. But what ends up happening is, in the gameplay scheme of things, you have an open arena where each player controls a Zoid and a rider. And when a battle starts, you have free movement in the arena. You have a light attack, a heavy attack, and a sort of like break attack. And in addition to that, if you hold down the R button and press one of the same buttons attributed to those attacks, you can use like three special moves that are unique to the characters. Like, you know, like, I don't want to say like, because they're just special moves, like in a fighting game. So the idea behind it is that you want to utilize those moves to the best of your ability to beat the tar out of your opponent. Now, there are some elements of strategy that they kind of provide to the game. Like, for example, if you use one of those R attacks, you have to, there's like a recharge meter that needs to fill up before you can use that move again. And there's also things like as a guard button, and there's like a sort of like a juke button where you can kind of dash off to the side slightly to avoid an attack. And there's also the most important thing, well, not important, but the thing that gives the game its title is the Wild Burst. So after you've taken enough damage and given enough damage, there's a gauge in the upper left corner or upper right, depending on which player you are, that fills up. And once it happens, you hit, I believe it's both triggers, because every time it happens, it's like mashing both. And I was like, one of these is going to work. But I believe it was both triggers. And you'll go into Wild Burst mode, which is essentially, it differs based on either what you chose in the versus mode or who you're playing as in the story mode. It can be something like an attack boost or a gauge boost, which means that your moves recharge faster. But in addition to that, you also, all the moves kind of get like new titles and like, I guess, slight variations to how they used to work. So like more powerful attacks, and you get this boost that comes with it. And it works, of course, until the timer runs out and it wears off. Oh, that sounds great. And in a way, it kind of is, except for the fact that in my experience with the game, it ultimately devolves into a button mash fest in the end. Like, I wasn't playing as any humans, but in the computer mode, I genuinely felt like battles pretty much consisted of hit my quick attack 4 times, my heavy attack 2 times, and then my guard crash. Knock the enemy down. He goes in like an invincible, like temporarily invulnerable down state. Then he gets up, he does the same to me, and either I guard or I absorb the hit. And then I get up and do the same thing to him. Eventually, ward bursts, go bonkers, and hopefully knock him out. So I never really felt that as I was playing the game that I was even trying to strategize combat or really get it in. Like, you know, typically when you play a fighting game that's not an anime, you know, franchise, licensed fighter, I mean, you typically find yourself wanting to master a character or, I don't know, get the ins and outs. Like, I came up with this really cool combo. But I just never quite got that here. Not to say it's a bad thing, but just to let you know, like, it comes across as being semi-shallow. However, I feel like this is something that could work better if you were playing against a human. Because if you're both into the game, you're both in the Zoids, well, then you got more, you know, to try to master as far as combat. You might get better at dodging attacks and knowing when to guard and when to, like, hit breaks. Because even if you attack from the sides or from the back, you actually do more damage, like a crit. So it's almost like they even give you incentive to try to circle around the guy and hit him from the back. But the biggest issue I had, aside from even that, because there's 16 characters, so there's, like, a lot of characters to play around with, though I genuinely feel like they're not very balanced. Though, with that said, you can eventually unlock a second version of every character, and those second versions have different stats, so that version might be better than the first, if you're lucky. But I felt like there was definitely a bit of unbalance there with some of these guys. But again, anime fighter, you're not really going to sit there in the training wheels room to balance everybody. I'm just like, here's a cool scorpion. He's going to fight a fucking dinosaur. Enjoy, kids.
But to me, the bigger issue, for given how much they're asking for it, is that there's not a lot to do in the game. Well, there is, and there also isn't. So the options you get are versus mode, so you can battle against a computer opponent or a friend. Then there's the mission mode, which is essentially the story mode. You go into a tree of linked nodes, and each node pretty much consists of some dialogue between two characters and then a battle. You start out as Arashi, who's I assume is the main character of the franchise, but eventually you unlock branching paths, and those branching paths let you play additional story modes as other characters. So you might be using Battalia at some point, or that really goofy guy with the glasses. But the point is, you'll use different characters in their story modes. But it ends up being, it feels like more of the same. Like, a lot of times you'll be fighting like the same random wild dinosaur, or you'll like end up fighting Arashi, whereas the last time you fought, you used Arashi against the glasses kid. Now you're the glasses kid fighting Arashi. Oh, man! But in the end, it ends up just being mash, mash, mash till the battle's over. Like, again, I'm not into Zoids, so maybe I was missing the oomph. But whereas this was like, say, like we were talking about Fairy Tail a couple weeks ago, maybe it had been different. But I ultimately found myself not really all that invested in the storyline, which means that I was just going from node to node, mashing X to win, or mashing heavy to win, or mashing light four times, then heavy two times, then crash to win. But, I mean, the gameplay itself is sound. The character voices are very much like I'd expect to be from like a Funimation anime. So I wouldn't be surprised if they actually got the official characters to voice these guys in this too. The story is pretty light, very, you know, kids anime-y, you know, kids that run giant dinosaurs saving the world somehow. And the big new plot twist is like the variants, which is how you get the new skins for the different characters, which gives you the different stats. It's just the first battle, the guy goes, "Hey, we found this cool new thing. There are variants to the Zoids. We just discovered them." And the very next fight, "Holy cow, a Zoid variant. I've never seen one." It's like, what? that was fast. But essentially, the game, I feel will ultimately be about as deep as a person wants to try to make it. And by that, I mean, you'll be trying really hard to make it even remotely deep. If you got a friend to play against, then you'll probably have fun, you know, unlocking the additional characters. Again, there's like a total of like 16 or 17 of them. You'll unlock the different characters and just kind of mix them and say, "Okay, I like the turtle better. No, I like the Tyrannosaurus Rex better." And just kind of mixing and matching them. But as a single player game, I feel like you'll get tired of it very fast, and like you're knee deep into this franchise. So it's like almost like a buyer beware warning in that regard.
Well, overall, $40. We need a verdict.
I'd say if you're already a fan of the Zoids franchise, then you can't go wrong with a buy it. But if you are not, and this is just like, ooh, anime fighter, this is low on the try it side. I don't want to straight up call it deny it, because the game does function and it plays. But there's that fair warning of it's not a deep game.
No. All right, well, moving on, next game to talk about is called Outbreak, developed and published by Dead Drop Studios, released October 22nd on PS4 for $12.99. The clock never stops as you attempt to manage an extremely limited inventory with a murderous horde on the hunt. Choose between acquiring additional weapons, healing items, or necessary tools for progression. You have only one life, make it count. Our friend Serlina wrote in a review this one. This is what she's got to say. "Greetings, SML friends and fam. It's Serlina, and for this week, I'm reviewing Outbreak for the PS4, developed by Dead Drop Studios. Outbreak is a 2D top-down 8-bit 90s horror game, throwback and love letter, where you'll face tons of brain-devouring zombies, intricate puzzles, tank walking, and inventory management hell. Let's get on with the review. If you guys have been following my reviews of Outbreak series, then you should know what to expect, right? Well, wrong. See, we reviewed the games out of order, so this game, Outbreak, is actually the very first game in the series, because they released wrong on PlayStation. I don't know why they released them that way, but I think they're releasing wrong on the Switch as well, so that's going to be fun. And this is why the look and controls of the game are different, but the overall feel is the same mostly. First major difference is that this is an 8-bit game and sports a top-down camera. If you played the other games, this is a serious departure. It also features a choice between classic tank walking, modern tank walking, and action walking. You can choose between 7 different characters, each with their own perks and weaknesses. Limited inventory is back unless you play with a certain character. Maps are back, as well as highlighting items on said map. Save points and inventory chests are gone, but you can finally play with local, local split screen co-op, or you can get an AI to help you fight these zombies. Finally, that's where the word finally came in. There's a new mechanic of being able to construct barricades. Caught up? Great. Continuing on to the story. The story is pretty much the same. In fact, it's the beginning of the series story, so you get to learn how the outbreak happened. The writing is still there. I appreciate the effort given each scenario background. For some reason, only 4 of the 7 characters have available, or 4 of the 7 characters available have background stories, but they're all essentially the same. Character comes from insert place here. Character goes to hospital. Character see zombies in destruction. Character meets other characters. The end. I've already voiced my concerns on the writing. No need to harp on it further, but don't expect much. Let's talk about the gameplay. The gameplay is a tad bit rough. Even playing the tutorial, the game doesn't really tell you the button layout. It tells you what you need to do, but not how to do it. So I spent a fair amount of time testing each button to see what I would do, which I did not enjoy. As I said earlier, Outbreak gives you AI to help you, but the game doesn't really tell you how that AI helps you. Whoever the character is, they just shoot zombies. The game doesn't tell you if you can access their inventory, if you can give them stuff, if you can heal them, anything really. Movement is slow until you can figure out that you can move, or you can press the circle button to run, which is better. However, you can't run or move if you're shooting or aiming. Also, the map is helpful in identifying where items are and where you need to go, but you can't move the camera in the game or the map. Speaking of the camera, sometimes it'll lock up in certain areas, which is intentional and annoying. As you explore, you'll see that the game has a fog of war, which is cool, but it never disappears once you go through it, so what's the point? As for the zombies, they are surprisingly quick and hardy. They can also grab you, and you can't do anything until the grab is over. It was satisfying to kill my first zombie, but it became a slog to kill the rest of them. Outbreak will be available on the PS4 on October 22nd, and should you buy this one, this is tough. If this is your first one, or you want to complete your Outbreak series collection and support the studio, by all means, try it. However, if you have any of the other Outbreak games, there's not much here for you. You'll probably feel the same frustration that I do, because the other games are simply better in every meaning of the word. Still, I do have the utmost respect for Dead Drop Studios and understand what he was trying to do. I'm in awe of his accomplishments, and I see the love he has for this series. My own views towards 90 horror games have been changed because of this series. It has been a pleasure to review these games. Chris, any thoughts?
Yeah, I just had to figure out which button I was using for mute. Like, there's one on my microphone and there's one on Skype, and I was like,
Wrong one. Whoops.
You know what's funny about this is that I actually had the most fun with this one.
Did you?
Yeah, I mean, it's the exact same game as the others. It's true. All the way down to, like, the giant tomes being, like, you know, diary entries from people, you know, instead of, like, different graphics to represent them. You know, the extremely limited inventory, which, by the way, you're going to want to play as the fourth character if you want to have 2 more inventory slots. That way you can hold more than one gun and a key and a potion at the same time. I like this one because it's, like, you know, it's kind of hard to describe. So basically, like, yeah, you go into it and it's completely top down. The characters, yeah, graphically, it looks like they're like South Park cutouts, but like for just like kind of paper cutout characters. But in an extreme top down view, like you don't see any facial features. Like you just get to know like the top of the character's head and their 2 shoulders. And, you know, you're, like she said, there's like, you know, 4 characters the story focuses on. There's 3 more that you can select. You read the story separately from actually playing the stages. You can choose any stage at any time, I believe. I played the last stage today, and I sure as heck didn't beat the second stage. But you get a partner with you, and they're generally better, like, much faster at taking down zombies than you are. So I kind of found myself sort of playing defense, like, kind of backing up my character or my secondary character. And, yeah, it's just, like, walking around and trying to, like, find the books, you know, find the yellow exclamation point that's going to give you the right hint that'll get you through that, you know, that coded password door, or, you know, find the right key that'll open the right lock, or that yellow key card, or, you know, keys, key cards, and passwords is all of what's in this game. And I don't know, like, none of it makes any sense, but it's just kind of like, I think this game, like, successfully crosses the line into making it, like, more accessible to somebody who doesn't want to mess with like the 3D like style of the other games, especially like the second game or whatever that had like that had the cinematic camera angles, which I always do not like.
No.
Without tank controls, those are rough. But you know, this one's just like straightforward. My only real complaint about it is that like if you're going into a new area, there it's dark, and then when you walk into it, it becomes light. Oftentimes the light will not come on until you've already walked all the way past a zombie that's coming after you, and then you're kind of trapped in there with them. Like, you know, the lights don't turn on in enough time, but I don't know. Like this one, I guess this one, its saving grace is that it is small, and so it kind of more meets the expectation I had for it. Like the big 3D games, you know, they again were the same thing, but like, I was kind of more applying my standards to 3D shooters, over-the-shoulder shooters, like when I was playing those, and then they, you know, fell short. But on this one, it's a top-down, like, almost a twin-stick shooter, but with, like, handguns and stuff. And, you know, I had less expectation going in, and it met those expectations. So, in a sense, this is actually kind of the one I liked the most.
Cool. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, next game to talk about is called Scourgebringer, developed by Flying Oak Games and E-Studio, published by Dear Villagers, released October 21st on Xbox One, Switch, and PC for $16.99. Scourgebringer is a fast-paced, free-moving, roguelike platformer. Help Kyra explore the unknown and slash her way through an ancient machine's guarding the seal of her past and maybe the redemption of humanity. Purnell, tell us about this one.
You want to talk about a friggin' formality? Here it is. You should buy this. Buy this game now. You want some you want some perspective on this? This game was supposed to get reviewed last week. I got the code and got obsessed with it.
No, it's supposed to be reviewed next week.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's supposed to be reviewed next week, but I'm on it
you
now.
Said last week.
I'm drunk.
Leave I know you are.
Drinking tea. anyway, the point is, this game, I love it. It's a fantastic game, but I should probably tell you why. So let's get it in.
Explain what the game is. We need some details.
So essentially, this game is a roguelike platformer where you are kind of wandering a series of rooms, clearing them out of enemies, and then, you know, fighting the boss or whatever, which I'll get into shortly. But the thing that makes this game particularly cool is that the platforming isn't really the challenge. In fact, the platforming is almost inconsequential because your character can air dash, double jump, wall run to the point where if you're good enough, you never really have to touch the ground. Like, it's ridiculous. But the challenge is utilizing those moves to fight the waves of enemies that are pretty much built to really wreck your day. Like, you, if you're not paying attention, you'll die, like, in the first or second room. Like, the game starts out hard and just gets harder as you go. So the moves that you get, very few moves, really. You get a light attack, a heavy attack, a dash move, and pretty much a gun. So the light attack is pretty much what it is. It's just, like, mashing the attack button, smacking enemies around. The heavy attack button is a slow, basically a slow, deliberate attack that you'll pull off, but when you hit most enemies with it, you'll kind of stun them and knock them back, which gives you a little bit of time to breathe and also to just wail on them with, like, hits. The gun, which I honestly admittedly rarely ended up using unless I was a true pinch, the gun is just a distance attack that you can pull off that, as you fire bullets off, you run out eventually, but you can refill them using either pickups that you find or attacking enemies to refill a gauge, and every time the gauge refills, you'll get one bullet back. So the idea here is every floor, you'll spawn in, and you'll explore room to room, killing enemies, and every time you kill enemies, you'll get blood. Blood is used to buy new, you know, stat augmentations or new guns at the shop that you can sometimes stumble across in the game. Your goal is to find the mid-boss that spawns somewhere on in the area. And when you find him and kill him, you unlock the door to the actual area boss. And once you defeat him, you go to the next overall area, which is completely new thematic, new music and everything.
Now, the thing I like about this particularly, in addition to just how the gameplay works, is the fact that the music really lends itself to getting you pumped for battle, because it does that thing where when you're exploring, the music is kind of quiet and like doo-doo, atmospheric. And the moment you load that first blow in a room, start the battle going, it goes like this hard rock soundtrack, which I've been bumping for the last couple of days, actually. It goes like a really hard soundtrack, gets you pumped, gets you dodging crap, and it just, you feel it. You're really into it at that point, every single time. And also, every time, I don't know particularly how you get it, whether it's a rare drop or you get it from bosses, but every once in a while, you'll get like white blood cells, as opposed to like the normal demon blood cells. When you leave each run, you can go to a tree that exists outside of the main area, and you can spend those bits to unlock nodes on tree branches, which is essentially a skill tree, to unlock different things, whether it's like a ground pound, for example, or an eventual combo system, which you will want to unlock ASAP, because that's how you will unlock blood quicker, to buy stuff in the dungeon. And you'll basically just be spending your white blood cells to unlock new permanent upgrades a la typical roguelike structure, to make your runs a little bit easier. It is also computers that you'll come across, which slowly but surely unlock the history and story behind the game that you are playing. The only thing I really noticed that makes this game kind of rough are two things. The obvious thing to get out of the way, of course, is that if you're not good at games, good luck with this, because they're not pulling punches. The game starts out hard and it doesn't let up. So basically, hopefully you're willing to kind of put your foot in there and give it a shot. But if you're not, walk the hell away. The other thing is that, related to the last thing I said, if you find yourself dying a ridiculous number of times on that first section, you'll start to notice room layouts repeat. And that could be a thing that might make you feel a little bit kind of on the ass side, because, like I said, the action still ends up being great. But you'll be like fighting like the same like five enemies in the same styles of rooms, just rearranged, and you might find yourself going, oh man, I really want to fight some new monsters, but unfortunately, to see the new guys, you got to get past that zone. So good luck with that. But as long as you're okay with the fact that you'll know that you're going to die a lot, you're going to be pressing the try a lot to see new cool stuff, you will love this game. It's like, if you like Celeste, for example, with the platforming structure that game has, because it kind of has the same thing of like, you know, methodical platforming to like, okay, hit this guy. Now that I've hit him, dash off of him, heavy attack the turret that's on the ceiling so I can actually stun it for a bit. Okay, now dash behind this wall because that monster on the floor is going to spray bullets all around the room. I got to hide from the bullets. And like, you start chaining thoughts together in a way that you would kind of do with a Celeste platforming room. It's freaking good. I love this game. Buy this shit. It's worth the money. Across the board.
Colin, did you get any time into this one?
I did. I was actually playing it just now and put it down because the review started. I've played it a lot. My hands hurt. It's fucking hard. There's an interesting quirk where I don't mind when a game is hard as much when it's a roguelite. Like, you expect it to be fucking hard, right? Yeah. I was a little surprised that, like, I died on the first room for, like, four runs. It took me until my eighth run to get to a boss room.
Wow.
And then I didn't even get a hit in.
The boss is a dick. First boss.
I am on like run 50 some shit, and I still haven't killed a boss yet.
Jeez.
But I've like, at least I've gotten enough of the upgrade points that I can get that far now. I know it's supposed to be hard. I don't particularly mind that it's hard. I would like them to at least offer a difficulty option, because I don't think there is one.
Mm-mm. If this is like, the upgrades are meant to kind of lower the challenge, but in the end, yeah, they...
Yeah. Like, it's still really crazy hard. So, yeah, on Xbox, I know it's in game preview, so...
No, it's out of game preview. It is officially fully launched right now.
Oh, the PC version on Xbox still says Beta XGP 1.3.
Hmm. Oh, well, it's supposedly officially out of early access and is available for full release now.
I am desperately hoping they reconsider a difficulty mode. It's needed if you're actually going to get through it. That said, I'm a glutton for punishment. These are my bread and butter. My hands hurt, but I'm determined to get somewhere in the game because I adore it. And it's funny. I don't typically like that pixel art look. but they've done such a good job. And I can really appreciate the effort that's gone into the artwork. I'm in trouble because I'm far more attached to the game than I should be.
No, that's not trouble. That's joy.
Definitely trouble. I ain't got time for this shit.
I didn't even mention the whole thing about the finding the blood tome, the blood stump statues and the levels to get like level specific perks.
Yeah. There was one thing I really do appreciate, though, that if you died a fuck ton of times, the game takes a little bit of pity on you and will spawn a little dude at the beginning who has apparently just been, like, going around scrounging up shit you drop. And he just gives you a whole bunch of power-ups out of pity.
Good stuff, too.
Yeah, it's always good stuff. And you're like, oh. And then, like, you die on the fourth room and it doesn't fucking matter.
Yep. No, I remember Lord. One time he came up for me. He had, like, he gave me, like, a new gun. Machine gun. For me, it was a shotgun. He gave me, three more hit points.
Mm-hmm.
He really hooked it up. And he loads you the fuck up,
and then you just go die because you think you're invincible. You've got all this shit now.
And it's like, nope. Yeah. Good luck. And the worst part about it, I didn't even think about it, but just like we mentioned the shops earlier, like, oh yeah, well, you'll save up some blood and you can go buy something cool. The shops aren't fucking around either because you might be lucky to afford one thing unless you really start working those combos.
Yeah. Which would just be expensive.
No, the game's not expensive. It's only $17. So what are your thoughts?
Oh, buy it.
I think it's definitely worth it. And I think if you're concerned about the difficulty of it, try it on Game Pass first.
Yeah, because it's on Game Pass. And even better, it's 20% off on Game Pass. So if you really like it, it's only $13.59.
Word of warning, though, if you think you're going to stack those achievements, get fucked. It's Play Anywhere. There's only one achievement list.
Yay. All right. Well, one last PartyCast game to talk about is called 2 Parsecs from Earth, developed by ABX Games, published by Rattalaika Games and Grab the Games, released October 14th on PS4, 15th on Xbox, 16th on Switch and Steam for $7.99. Robot Zelly's ship is crash-landed on an inhospitable planet called Dimidium, filled with alien landscapes and hostile surroundings. To escape and return home, Zelly must gather clues, gain powers, and discover artifacts needed to fix a spaceship. Explore the planet in this Metroidvania-style exploration game where the environment is your enemy. Chris, tell us about 2 Parsecs from Earth.
All right, 2 Parsecs from Earth. Well, of course, as we know, a parsec is a measure of distance and not speed. I also don't know if it's actually even factual, because, I don't know, Star Wars references. Anywho's, okay, so this is like basically a precision platformer that is disguised as a Metroidvania. It kind of has like Metroidvania elements, but at its heart, it's actually a precision platformer, like puzzle type thing. So what it is that you're Zelly, spelled Z3L1, and you are a sarcastic robot who basically has total and complete access to the fourth wall. Like, there's a lot of game dev jokes in it, which is pretty fun. And the jokes are, one of the jokes is that if you don't like the jokes, then donate to the dev directly so they can hire a script writer. That's literally one of the lines in it. So this what game does
play it on, Chris?
What did I play it on? PS4? Uh-huh.
PS4. Okay, at the beginning, there's a joke about where's my 1000G? Is that in there on the PS4 version, or did they change it to trophies?
It just says trophies. Yeah, where's my platinum?
I give them credit for changing it, because when I saw it, I was like, boy, they know they're publishing through Rattalaika.
Yeah, exactly.
What people are expecting.
Yeah. And yeah, so there's just all kinds of jokes like that kind of peppered in. And so you basically start walking around. Of course, you can't even jump yet. All you can do is walk left or right. And then Zelly repairs its leg, and then you can jump. And then basically from here, you can start exploring. Now, the things that you're trying to find 3 batteries, 30 pieces of cargo, because you need to take your cargo to Earth, and 3 upgrades, which are basically located in, you know, they're all located in set spots, of course, but the upgrade stations, here's where the game gets different and actually kind of unique. The first upgrade station you come to, you can get your first ability, which is either a double jump or a dash. You will take one and you will eschew the other and not have it for the rest of the game. So then if you choose like double jump, like I did, then there's like, all kinds of like ledges that you can now jump on. But then there's also all kinds of spike pits that you cannot travel across because you don't have dash. The entire game is constructed to be able to, accommodate one or the other. You can get all the way through the game, of course, without dashing because you've eschewed it, but then you have to like be real good on your double jumps. And then the second set is that you can either go through floors or you can go through walls, like certain floors that are, you know, that get you into different areas that you can't normally get to, or these walls that are like kind of like these rocks that are just in the way. And then you can choose a third set, which I'm trying to remember what it is. Oh, you can either use these teleporting stations that are scattered throughout the game, or you can shrink yourself to get through these smaller tunnels. So every time you pick one, you take away another. And so you kind of, as you play, your decisions decide where you can go and what you can do. One thing you can't do, no matter what, is fight. Every single thing kills you in one hit, and you have no way to fight back. So that's where I say it becomes a precision platformer, because you can't fight things. It's more of a puzzle of like, you know, being able to dodge them effectively. Fortunately, there's only 2 enemies in the whole game. There are, well, 2 kinds of enemies, of course. There are actually everywhere, but there's little porcupines that go back and forth, like a Koopa Troopa, just on a platform, at varying speeds. And then there's a bee or some kind of insect that when it gets close to you, it gets mad and dashes at you. And depending on where you are in relation to the bee, it's going to be its trajectory. So then you can kind of plan on jumping over them whenever they do that. So that's basically like the exploration part of the game in a nutshell. Now, every time you get a battery, this is where the game will, I think, become divisive for some people. Because every time you grab a battery, which, remember, you're required to get all 3 batteries, you are then taken away to a different stage where you must outrun a giant bee that as soon as it gets within range of you, it will kill you, and then you have to start that entire run over. Like, not the whole game run, but like that whole bonus stage, as it were. And those, of course, they take away all of the features of the platforms, like it just becomes a silhouette platformer at that point. Although, albeit, you can still see your character, and there's a lot of bloom lighting, so it's not even, it's hard to call it even a silhouette. But anyways, you jump over spikes, you dodge enemies and all this stuff, and you have to do it perfectly. Like, you absolutely cannot mess up. And the difference between the 3 battery stages is that, you know, at 1, 2, and 3 are, you know, each one gets longer, and it kind of reuses the beginning part of the other stage. So if you can get through the first part, sorry, if you can get through the first stage, then you can get through the first part of the second stage. And then you, if you can get through the second stage, you can get through most of the third stage, but then there's a bit waiting for you. But like getting through those runs, like you jump over so many enemies and spikes and all this other stuff, and you just like, just run a pixel afoul of a spike and then die and then have to start that whole thing over. Like, it really, you know, that requires the kind of patience that somebody who can do these pixel perfect kind of platformers and no one else. I can barely do it. Like, I did beat this game, by the way, just to let you know, full disclosure. So I did get through all those stages, but at the end of them, I was just like, so, but here's the cool thing. So of course, there's a lot of cargo scattered across the stage, and, you know, no matter what power-ups you pick, you do get to pick up the 30, and then you take those back to the ship area, take off, and the game is over, quote-unquote. But actually, then what they do is they have you start a new game plus, where you then have those three upgrades. You can go back through the entire game and pick up all the abilities that you eschewed the first time. So then you can end up with all six abilities, and you can get all of the cargo and then get, I suppose, the true ending. So that's kind of interesting, I think. And looking at the achievements in this game, it's like the game requires you to beat it 2.5 times for platinum. You have to get all of the power-ups, which is, of course, going to require two full playthroughs to get all of the abilities. Plus, you have to, once you go into New Game Plus, you can access these rooms that require, they're like basically super challenge rooms that are focused on only the one power-up. So like, there's a double jump room where everything that you do requires like mastery over the double jump. And then, you know, but these actually are rooms that are set up for combination. So like there's one that's like the double dash room. So you have to master double jumping and have dash to get through it and pick up like, it's usually like 4 or 5 pieces of cargo all throughout. And so, yeah, you basically have to clear all those rooms too. So that requires a full, like a regular playthrough, a full New Game Plus playthrough, and then another playthrough separately where you pick up the opposite set of items that you had before and eschew the opposite set. So this is not an easy platinum, this game. It's not easy at all, but it's relatively short. It took I had an hour on the clock and 188 deaths when I beat it.
Jeez.
So that's about how long it is. It's a very short game. But I really like the ideas that they went for. I just feel like implementing the pixel perfect platforming element, you know, that is a deal breaker for some people. You know, somebody in chat just mentioned that it's kind of a deal breaker, but I mean, it's one of the few Radalaika games I've beaten prior. That's not a visual novel prior to reviewing it. So I did have fun with it. And, the graphics are amazing. The music is kind of not there. It doesn't have very much in the way of music at all, but the graphics are very nice. And in fact, the developer knows this because the Zelly has this line about how there's a zoom function, which it teaches you. And then it says the zoom function does nothing. It's just that the person who did the art is so good that we wanted to make sure you could see the art.
Oh man. Cole, any thoughts on this one?
This is probably the hardest Radalaika I've ever played, and I 1K'd Duck Souls.
Damn. So,
I hate that pixel precision bullshit. Like, if I'm jumping around and I'm 2 pixels off, I shouldn't hit a spike and die.
And then there's, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but there's one more thing where it's like, you know, you have to do that pixel perfect jump. If you go like 1 pixel over, you won't fall, but it will eat your jump input, which
I had that happen a lot.
That happened to me a lot, yeah.
And it's frustrating. Not my highest rated Radalaika that we've played, especially not if you're looking for easy achievements. I do find the humor that all the achievements are 58 points.
I know, I love that. I love that there's a bunch of 58 pointers in this game just to piss people off.
I very much feel like the developer of this game knew about the achievement hunting community and was like, watch this.
Yeah, it's a Radalaika. I'm going to fuck with all of them.
I mean, we've had a couple come through under Radalaika that weren't easy, but this one definitely takes the cake. I find humor in it, although at the same time, I was like, God damn it, I just want to get to completion and move on.
yeah,
I like the
happening.
Art style. Their artist was really killing it. They did a good job. No complaints on that. Like Chris said, the music is non-existent. I didn't even know that there was background music.
It's like barely. It's
just
like
kind of forgot it was there. You know? But yeah, other than, you know, my biggest gripe being that it just eats your input sometimes, and it's fine.
Well, $8. What do the two of you think?
Okay, so I'm basically... based on what I said, if you are looking for a really interesting take on like Metroidvania ideas and you like some jokes, that are perhaps poorly translated, but again, they do challenge you to donate to them so they can hire a scriptwriter. So I that invalidates any complaint I have. But like a pretty funny game with like really interesting ideas and good art, but you don't mind the fact that you're going to be starting certain rooms and especially those battery stages over and over and over and over again, then I would say it is a cautious buy it. Like just watch a video or something, make sure you know what you're getting into. To everybody else, I say it's a try it. It's a pretty try it.
Cool. Cole?
Yeah, I'm gonna roll with a try it on it because I think the difficulty of it can be a bit of a put off, but beyond that, it stands up. It's fine game.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that is it for y'all. I got one more review I got to take care of with another friend of ours, Big Adam. So does anyone have any final words before I jump onto that? No, nothing. Anyone?
We nailed it.
Friend Roman's countrymen. Lend me your
vanilla.
Vanilla or vanilla bean.
I like how Purnell's just mumbling.
I didn't mumble. I explained vanilla bean.
No, you mumbled. No, you're drunk. You're tea drunk.
Bean. Vanilla. Bean.
It wasn't the vanilla bean you mumbled on. It was everything else that came before it.
But then I got excited about vanilla bean because everyone should like vanilla bean. It's delicious and you should consume it.
All right. And finally tonight, we're bringing in our good friend, Adam. How are you doing, Big Adam?
What's going on, man? Thanks for having me around.
It's good to have you on and in non-wrestling capacity.
Hey, look, I like video games too. In fact, everyone might say that I like video games more.
Dare say. Hey.
So I didn't start, I didn't help with a nonprofit, I should say, revolving around wrestling. I can tell you that much.
What would be a nonprofit surrounding wrestling? Would that be Botchamania?
Is Matthew a nonprofit? Should be. Can we make that man millions, please? Can someone please make that man millions? He deserves it. He's been working his face off.
He does deserve it.
I hard agree.
Hey, he gets more viewers than my show, so he's doing good.
He gets more viewers than any of our shows. So he does. Let's just keep that on the reel.
He needs to come back on my show. He came back in like the episode 60s.
Did you get Matthew on? I'm coming back. The three of us are just going to cause hell with some kind of AEW nonsense.
That'd be beautiful.
I'm into it.
You know what else I'm into? I'm into reviewing games. We got one final game to talk about this episode. You ready for this?
I am, man. I had a blast with this. I put 4 hours into this one, give or take 15 minutes or so. I had a blast. I got the pleasure of taking a look into Res Infinite VR.
Should I go down all the info?
Hit us with the info sheet, and then I'll give you my take on everything.
All right. Well, final game to talk about tonight is called Res Infinite, developed by Monstars Inc. and Resonair, published by Enhance. It released October 12th on the Oculus Quest store for $19.99. Experience 360 degrees of mind-blowing synthanasia as you blast through waves of enemies and giant transforming bosses with colors and sounds that sync and blend to the beat of Rez's legendary techno soundtrack. Big Adam, tell us about Res Infinite.
So this game starts with basically a violent swarm of light coming in your direction in VR. And that's a good thing because that's exactly what you expect from a game like this. It's got a pulsing soundtrack that really keeps you moving. It really does make you feel like you're kind of in the original Rez experience that we all had, you know, what, back in 2001 or however long ago that was?
I don't know, but my back hurts just talking about it.
Exactly. That's how I feel about it.
Back when our TVs only had three numbers instead of like 1080s, and now it's like 4000s. We just had we had our 480p's and we were happy.
Nobody had any idea what the hell a gigabit was, and we weren't even close to teraflopping. So
seriously,
that's you know, the simpler times. But this is a VR trek back to those simpler times. I played through all of the play mode. The play mode's basically the story mode. It comes with five different sections. The first three are very, very, very akin, if not identical. Honestly, I haven't played the original one since its release, so I don't remember. but they feel very familiar to the first release of the game. It's going to be familiar territory. You play with one of the touch controllers versus two, which actually I find to be one of the downsides. I don't like that it's only a single hand control. I wish that you could use both hands as two different guns. You are in a VR space. You do have, in some people's situations, you do have two hands. I really think that you should be able to use the controllers that you've been given. I feel like if you're going to have a VR experience, to essentially remove part of the controller or the functionality of the game by cutting it in half, essentially, it kind of takes a little bit out of the immersion. I will say that, again, the music is fantastic. You know this going into a Rez game.
Mm-hmm.
The fourth stage is wonderful in VR. It's the only stage that I came across that had me have to turn around in my physical play space, because I did play this in room scale, where I was looking behind where I would have been judging as quote-unquote forward. I had to turn 180 degrees around physically to actually get stuff behind me to make sure that I was keeping up with it. It was the only stage in the game where that happened. It was definitely stage four, in my opinion, or I should say layer four, in my opinion, was definitely the VR quote unquote show off level. It was gorgeous. Layer five is interesting in and of itself. Layer five by itself is actually longer than the entirety of the rest of the game. You go through your standard 10-stage situation, all kinds of new enemies, all kinds of color. This one actually tells a story as you go through about the life cycles and the death cycles of just anything, right? Just anything, and it's assumed that it's on Earth. The beginning of times into the end of times, and then the rebirth of and the whole cycle of life. It's a really cool kind of acid trippy way of looking at it. The music that goes along with it is absolutely fantastic. Again, a really hard hitting bass centered EDM track that just kind of keeps you focused. It keeps the legs moving. It kind of keeps you focused on exactly what you're doing, trying to get max combos of eight and just unleashing hell on everything. After you get through that 10th stage, you then run into Eden. And Eden is a multi-part boss rush, is what I'm going to call it. It has throwbacks to all of the different bosses that you've come to and all of the different layers. If I'm being entirely honest with you, I wasn't actually able to beat Eden in the very end. I got to her final, I guess you would call it her final form, or what I assume to be her final form, and I did lose, which sucks. But you don't have to beat Eden to get a credit roll. So technically I beat the game because I did earn myself a credit roll. but it does say that she is unfortunately still trapped inside of the machine. And it says to play stage five again to see if you can't get her free. I gave it three shots and unfortunately I couldn't get her free. That last stage is insanely difficult. Which, honestly, the last stage being really hard was a really, really good thing to me, because the first three stages were very easy. In VR, the complicated portion of getting a cursor from one side of the screen to the other using a simple analog stick is no longer the case. You just point your hand and the cursor's already there. So it takes a little bit of the challenge out of the first three layers of the game. I will be honest and say that, but it doesn't really take away from the fun or the experience of the game. For this one, I'm definitely going to say that people should try this out. If they have a friend, they have a family member, they know somebody, they come across a table at a convention when we're allowed to do those again, if you get a chance to try out Rez Infinite VR, absolutely give it a try. It's super, super fun. You can make the decision on whether or not you think it's worth $20. In my personal opinion, it's absolutely worth $20. I think the VR price tags right now are so absolutely beginner and entry level friendly at $20 and $30 each. This game comes in on the lower side of that at $20. But I'm going to say to everybody out there, definitely give this one a try.
Awesome. Sounds good. All right. Well, that is it for this episode. We made it through another one. Big Adam, thank you for being here, hanging out and wrapping up the show with me.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me again. I appreciate it.
Big thanks to the PartyCast crew for coming on, doing their reviews. And one more thanks to Florian at End Road for coming on and chatting about Fallback. Hopefully we'll hear some more news about that hitting console next year, but for now, check it out. It is on Steam. It is available. It is awesome, and get it before the price goes up. But yeah, that is it for this episode. Big Adam, what kind of music should I play?
You know what? I mean, I really like metal, but I really like video games. I just play some metal VGM.
I mean, I do that like every show.
Okay.
Anybody specific?
I gotta give a little love to my boys over in Lame Genie. They just released a new Hollow Knight track that is chef's kiss.
All right. Well, then we will play that. Sound good?
Yeah. Hell yeah.
All right. Any final words to end the show?
Be cool to everybody. Everybody's going through rough times right now. Everybody's got a heavy load. Just send a heart to your favorite friend or 12 and be cool, everybody. Much love.
You said load.